See, good afternoon. We're going to call this meeting of TRPA Governing Board to order. The date is Wednesday, August 25, 2021, and it's approximately 12:21. First item on the agenda is the roll call to determine whether we have a quorum. Mario, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Alding?
She's here, I know. Maybe she's on mute.
I see her there. Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagatsky?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Present.
Mr. Friedrich?
Present.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Mr. Hicks?
Present.
Ms. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Ms. Novosel?
Here.
Mr. Wright?
Here.
Ms. Williamson?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I'll now go over the rules for the meeting today. To observe and participate in the meeting, go to www.trpa.gov, select August 25, 2021 Governing Board Meeting on the calendar and follow the link to the webinar. Members of the public can find all meeting materials there as well. To participate in this governing board meeting with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the GoToWebinar platform at the appropriate agenda time. If you wish to make a comment about something not on the agenda, we will hear your comments during the general public comment period at the end of the meeting, agenda item 13. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the governing board. If you have contacted the TRPA for reasonable accommodation and received a unique PIN for dial-in, please make sure you enter the PIN so that you may be identified and unmuted by TRPA staff. If you're using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it is opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. If you're joining via the call-in number posted on our website, please note this is a listen-only option. If you wish to address the governing board, you will need to log in via GoToWebinar on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, or dial your unique PIN number. To remote governing board members, if you wish to speak, please alert me via the chat function if you're online, or speak up if you're calling in. Please set your chat box now to message panelists and organizers to ensure that I see your message. Remote board members may only use the chat function to indicate desire to speak. This function must not be used to have sidebar conversations. Please remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. Finally, I would like to have all remote members turn on their cameras, as we now have sufficient capacity of our platforms to accommodate everybody on the screen. We're moving to agenda item number 2. And just before this, I did want to bring to everybody's attention that it's a special day for us because it happens to be our executive director's birthday today. I wanted everybody to wish Joanne a happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Joanne.
Do we dare to do Joanne?
Hey.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Mark.
I hope they have cake for you up there, Joanne. I hope they do. Okay.
Well, once every 7 years I draw this.
Very good. Very good. Pledge of Allegiance. Okay. Catherine, would you please lead us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Agenda item 3, approval of agenda. Let's see, are there any changes to the agenda, Joanne?
Yes, let me note one change in order right at the moment. the item 7A, which is a briefing on emergency response and evacuation planning, will be taken out of order ahead of the administrative matter on the resolution for Casey Bayou, because our fire folks are on call and need to do this earlier today. Okay.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and we will most certainly accommodate that. And thank you for the amendment. John, we have one more amendment.
Yeah, we have one more. Item 8B, the appeal of the single pier expansion application, where the Gately appeal has been withdrawn. We've come to an agreement with the appellant such that we will be bringing to the Shore Line Steering Committee the fundamental issue of whether or not we should have another exemption for non-conforming structures for expansions, for conversions of boat buoys to boat lifts. So with that agreement, they are in agreement to withdraw that appeal, and their consultant, Jan Briscoe, is on the line if you need to hear from her.
My understanding is, John, as you've spoken with her, she's in agreement on behalf of her client. That's on the record. And with those two amendments, I think our agenda is set. Thank you very much. Let's move to agenda item 4, approval of minutes. We have a set of minutes from July 28th, 29th, 2021, governing board meeting. Are there any questions, comments, or changes?
Mr. Chairman, I have no changes to recommend, and seeing that nobody else has any concerns, I move to approve the minutes of the governing board meeting on July 29th, 2021, as presented.
Excellent. Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Okay. Thanks, Shelley, for the motion. Item 5, moving on to agenda item 5. There are 4 items on consent. 2 items were reviewed by the Operations and Governance Committee. 1 was reviewed by legal committee, and 1 was not reviewed by any committee. As a reminder to the public, after board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. Shelley, are you able to provide us with a report on the Operations and Governance Committee meeting earlier this morning?
Yes. As noted, the Operations and Governance Committee reviewed the July financials and the release of $35,666 from the Douglas County Air Quality Mitigation Fund for planning and design costs related to a new Transportation District Administration and Maintenance Facility, and recommended approval of both items.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Do we have any questions or comments regarding that item? I don't see any. If you do, speak up, please. With that, John Marshall, will you please provide a report from the legal committee?
Yes, legal committee considered consent calendar item 3 and unanimously recommended approval by the governing board of the proposed resolution of enforcement for the Edgewood companies. And principally, there would be $55,000 in a payment to TRPA, a penalty to TRPA, and a $50,000 contribution to a above and beyond project on the Edgewood properties regarding invasive species.
Thank you very much. And also repairing and rehabilitating the issue. Is that correct? Sorry, I think you already mentioned that.
There is. The restoration component has basically already been done.
Yeah, okay.
So that's also required.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, John. If there's any questions or comments on that, I don't see any. So we will, at this point in time, final term on consent. was not reviewed by any committee. And it's the AJC California Holdings LLC 20 unit deed restricted achievable multifamily housing project, 941 Silver Dollar Avenue, City of Southlake Tahoe, California, TRPA file ERSP 2020-1763, assessor's parcel number APN 031-290-012. Information on this item can be found on page 73 of your packets. And we have Paul Nielsen from TRPA available for any questions from the board. Are there any questions regarding that item? I don't hear any. I don't see any. And so at this point in time, Paul, thanks for being available. We will go to the public comment. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. I'll turn it over to Catherine for public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We'll close public comment at this time. And I will ask for a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion. Mario, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
I think you're muted.
I'll come back to Ms. Faustinos. Mrs. Sagafsky?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos? Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Did we, excuse me, this is John Marshall.
Yes.
I did not hear a vote from Ms. Faustinos. Was that audible?
No, I did not hear a vote either.
So, and we have one California project on the list, so we need all five Californians voting.
Okay. She indicated she would be on the phone, but just wouldn't be on the screen. So let's see if, oh, there she is. Yeah, bandwidth issues. I literally just got a chat from her, bandwidth issues.
John, can you leave that item? Can we continue that item and come back to it when she can vote?
Well, she did say yes.
Okay.
Oh, did you hear that, John? I mean, Bill?
No. It's Bill, on her chat. No.
In the chat.
She says, yes, bandwidth issues. If, Belinda, if you're hearing, can you say specifically that's yes to the consent calendar, please? On the chat?
Yes.
Yeah, if you'll just send us another chat. There you go. Yes to consent calendar. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Belinda. Sorry for the difficulty. Okay. Let's see. At this point in time, we are going to move to item six, but we're going to, since 6A is the only item in six, we're going to jump straight to 7A. Briefing by Chief Clive Savakul, City of Southlake Tahoe Fire Rescue on Emergency Response Evacuation Planning. Information on this item can be found on page 143. As a reminder to the public, After staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. At this point in time, I'd like to pass it, the meeting over to Jeff Cowan to introduce the chief to present. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the TRPA Governing Board. I'm Jeff. I'm the Public Information Officer with the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, and I'm also the agency representative to the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Public Information Team. I can tell you it is a real pleasure to introduce this item on evacuation planning to you today. The board expressed interest in this topic earlier this year, and TRPA staff began reaching out to law enforcement and fire protection representatives who are the lead agencies on evacuation and emergency response preparation in the Tahoe region. And as a reminder, the board also passed a resolution in May in support of the 2021 Tahoe Wildfire Awareness Campaign, and also in support of the responsibility of every resident and visitor to the Tahoe Basin to be prepared for wildfire and to have their own evacuation plans and go bags at the ready. At that time, we probably all should have guessed that this topic would become extra poignant this year as climate change and prolonged drought are changing forest ecosystems right before our eyes. The question, not of if, but of when, is being answered right now for us as wildfire and evacuation warnings approach the very rim of the Tahoe Basin. With the Caldor Fire now less than a dozen miles to the southwest of us, we are incredibly fortunate and grateful that local law enforcement and fire protection personnel have agreed to join us today and to provide the board and staff with an overview of evacuation planning. The lead presenter is Lieutenant Travis Cabral of the City of South Lake Tahoe Police Department, who is presenting on behalf of Chief Savakul of South Lake Tahoe Fire Rescue, who was called away this afternoon for a meeting on the Caldor Fire. We are also fortunate to have Fire Marshal Eric Gavon with Tahoe Douglas Fire Protection District, who was able to join the meeting today on very short notice. Thank you. Many of you may know Eric as he is the Fire District Representative to the TRPA Advisory Planning Commission. That seat was added to the APC at the request of the Governing Board following the devastating 2007 Angora wildfire. We are immeasurably grateful to these two for joining us today and for the incredible, hard, dangerous, and critical work that they and their compatriots are carrying out right now to save and protect us all. I'm going to turn it over to Lieutenant Cabral. And Lieutenant, you let us know when you want any slides or anything changed on the screen, and we will accommodate that for you. And then also, Fire Marshal Gavon, we will tap you in a few minutes to come on and say a few words and also to answer some questions. I'll turn it over to you.
Great, thank you. Hi, everyone. Lieutenant Travis Cabral, the South Lake Tahoe Police Department. First and foremost, I apologize for the chief not being able to attend. As you can imagine, it's been very busy for us over here. I'm actually at the airport in the Emergency Operations Center right now. Have been working nonstop since this fire began. So, again, we apologize. But I did convince them that I could have my own fire hat. So this is my second presentation I've done on behalf of the chief. So I said I want a fire hat and a lounge chair for my office. We're waiting on the lounge chair. Basically, I mean, great timing, first of all, to talk about this right now. This has been the topic of every conversation in the past few days as we prepare for what could possibly be something coming into Tahoe. As you know, it's you could just look outside and see the smoke pouring in. So not only is it the fire danger, but we also have the air quality danger. So we're getting a lot of questions, and hopefully this will help the community a little bit more with what we're doing to prepare, what we have done to prepare, and some things that are different from, say, the Angora fire. I apologize. I believe you guys have multiple documents from the chief that sent to you. You should have an overall map, which is our evacuations map, and then another document, which is the All Hazards Community Evacuation Plan. And those kind of go hand in hand with each other. So the first one I'll talk about up here on the screen is the evacuation map. So this map was a coordinated effort with our area law enforcement, fire personnel, basically all of our partners and stakeholders that would be involved in evacuations in the basin. We came up with this model, which, as you can see, is color-coded and named with very common names that all of us locals know, like the Al Tahoe neighborhood or Christmas Valley. And it's a way for us to find neighborhoods, say, in an evacuation and evacuate each neighborhood individually as it, you know, any disaster could either be one neighborhood or it could be the entire city. So this gives us a little bit more of an understandable, something that the public can understand, as well as outside law enforcement and public safety officials that can come into our area so that they can see and understand how we're going to evacuate. So if you go to the next one, I believe there's a packet, and I can come back to this one as well. So this is the All Hazards Community Evacuation Plan. Really what this is a preparation plan for our community and for visitors into Tahoe. As we know, the best way to prepare is to prepare yourself. And this gives a overview of what you can do as citizens to prepare yourself for any type of disaster. They're very basic principles, you know, preparing your family, identifying hazards in your community, knowing your entrances and outlets into and out of the basin, and things like that. This is something that we have put together in cooperation with multiple agencies around us, and is actually a plan that the El Dorado County Sheriff's Office had already prepared for countywide. So it was just natural for us to adopt the same plan, so we're all on the same page. This is shared both online with the city as well as through our Tourism Corps. We're working on ways to get them out to hotels, to be able to scan QR codes when people come into town to sign up for, let's say, our Code Red system, which is emergency notification systems, and gives us a little bit more access to provide people with information while they're here in Tahoe. So, again, this is more the preparedness side, because as we know, all disasters are different, and we can't really say specifically where a fire is going to come from, except for this one. We obviously know because we have time, but there's many times when disasters strike suddenly, and a plan to say, here's your evacuation center, may not be the same for one incident versus another. So if you go back to the initial slide, I can talk about the neighborhoods and everything. So on this slide, you're going to see a map of the city. Actually, it's the basin. So basically everything in the Tahoe Basin that we would have to evacuate in an emergency. For instance, Echo Summit, which is the blue one on the left on US 50, which, as you guys probably know, is on an evacuation warning right now, all the way through the state line core. This map does not include Douglas County. Douglas County actually does have their own system, which in, you know, a case of disaster, we would tie in with them, and we are tying in them with them as well for this in preparation. But this is something that again, we can use cross-jurisdictional, and everyone can understand what we're doing. So on this map, we have, and my map's a little bit more updated than you guys. We'll pass that out as soon as we get it out to the public. But it's going to give you all the street names and neighborhoods that we can provide to area law enforcement and our sister agencies that are going to come in and help us evacuate. A lot of times in evacuations, say for this fire, we may evacuate, say, the Christmas Valley area. So we'll send law enforcement first in the warning stage to go out, provide information both through the alert systems, but also, as we've known, the best form of communication is personal communication. So we go door to door, knocking on doors and letting people know what's going on. And then we can clear each neighborhood individually. So that's kind of a brief overview of how the evacuations work. And obviously, I'm sure people have questions, and I'm here to answer for you.
Great. Thank you very much. Jeff, any follow-up?
No, nothing for me. I think okay. I want to leave it okay. to the board. But then maybe... Great. If we could also, Eric Gabon from Tahoe Douglas Fire Protection District, if you're on, do you mind turning your camera on and just saying hi? And could you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing over in Round Hill for the last couple, for about the last week or so?
Sure, I don't mind at all. I don't know how to turn the camera on this platform. It won't let me do that. So unless you can see me.
We'll try and do it for you.
Don't okay, worry. Very good. Do it remotely. Or maybe I was blocked because I didn't even have that option.
No worries.
Let's see.
Luckily, we hear you loud and clear, so you're
Fantastic. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and continue while we figure that out, because that's not important. They say I have a face for radio anyways. So that was a joke. You guys should laugh. Anyways, we've been setting up information. We have a trap line set up through the fire district, as well as in South Lake, working with the Forest Service. They're basically some they're a two-faced board that has maps and the QR codes on it, and we push out the fire information on those boards. So those boards are available throughout our district. Gives fire information. We also set up felt the need to set up a information booth that was live staffed from it was live staffed from 1 to 5 initially over the weekend. So we did that on Saturday and Sunday. We worked with K Tahoe to broadcast those times and let people know that we were out there. We were at the Safeway at Round Hill, and we were there with information on evacuation preparedness. And one of the biggest things, or one of the bigger issues for us, we know this fire is away from the basin. Some say it's knocking at the Tahoe's door. We'll say we're going to shut that door. We're not going to let it get up here. But it's very unlikely that it will make a run into the basin. But it can happen. But more importantly, we want people to be aware that we're fire prone either way. So fires are going to happen, and we really want people to be situationally aware of what's going on. So that's somewhat of a difficult place to be in for us to get that information out, because we have a lot of transient occupancy, a lot of vacation home rentals, a lot of vacation homes, second homes, et cetera. So, but if we can get information to our residents and we're making those touch points by having the boards available for the community so they can get information, we really want our local residents to sign up for the reverse 911 system. Early notification is key in having a successful evacuation. So we geofence the areas around around Kingsbury, on down 50, out into Glenbrook. And so, we obviously can't flush everything at once. We need to, have some organization. Some priorities need to be made. And we try to give as much notice as possible, so that we can have, as the officer was explaining, a buffer zone, basically. So you're evacuating one area, you're warning another area, and that tier system kind of continues on. So we can geofence those areas, send an alert out to them, get their warnings out, and then we can send the notifications for evacuation. And it's really important that those people are prepared to leave at those times. So not only getting the notification, but responding. So that's why those touch points and being there face to face with individuals, we can calm them and equip them with the information that they need to respond in an emergency. We obviously have very limited egress out of the basin. So it's important that we can do that in an organized fashion. And the Angora fire, we did really well with that, and moving traffic. And luckily, no one was killed or injured in that. So that's, that's a win for us. And that's really what we're looking at, is keeping those arteries, those main arteries, unclogged, and keep that traffic moving. We might have cases where we move it in one direction. So Kingsbury may be made one way down, and then one way up, and we split that egress out. And that's how we would do that. The casinos, the larger buildings, they're pretty hardened against fire and wildfire, so they make a good place to make a stand and have a shelter in place. And I didn't know if the officer talked about that. I didn't hear that. But we have other areas where we can shelter people, temporary areas of refuge where we would direct the public to go. That would be done through those notification systems on the phones, but also through social media and mainly through the radio system. K Tahoe is tied in, and so we have them on emergency power, got them ready to broadcast information out to the public. They're a local radio station so that we can dialogue with them directly, and you know, we can change information quickly if we need to, make sure they're getting the right information out. Another source that we'll use is KOH 780. That's News Talk 780. It's broadcast out of Reno, but they have a very strong signal and they can hit the entire basin. So K Tahoe does really well, but the gaps that can be filled in by that radio signal is also important to have those other partners like KOH. And I think that about covers it. And I'd happy to answer any questions. I think, you know, making sure that people are ready, they have their go kits, they sign up for the early notification, because that's key. They know their routes out. They know how to dress appropriately. Flip flops and board shorts don't work in a fire situation. So we want to make sure that they're prepared for what they're faced with. You know, we look at a lot of what happened with the campfire in Paradise and the notifications there, and they had very difficult access, obviously. A lot of people say, or they compare that fire to what could happen in the basin, but we've done a lot of fuel work here as well. There's much more work to be done. We can use this time to get that information out to the public, and just be aware there's things they can do, and those action points will help calm them.
Tremendously valuable information, and I know a number of our board members are going to have questions and comments, and so I'd like to start with Sue, because she's chatted me, and I think Bud will be next.
Thank you, Chair. Just get some information out. I live in Christmas Valley, which is going to be the first area that would be affected if the fire were to come over. And actually, as we were speaking, I had three black and white cruise cars come down my street. One was from Fresno. So we have an amazing amount of help already, mutual aid coming from all over. And I just want to do a shout out to all of them. Talking to the officers a few minutes ago from Fresno, that's pretty great. You know, just knowing that we have that kind of support, that we are now nationally renowned, unfortunately, for this fire. But the good news there is there's a lot of support. I took a CHP cruiser up in the fire area on Sunday, and I have to report I never saw a flame going all the way down to Fresh Pond, which was really quite good to see or not see. You know, I do want to report that, you know, there's been a lot of misinformation in the social media, and I would just really recommend everybody do exactly what Travis and all the other firefighters are saying, and that is stay informed. If you have neighbors properties around you that are vacation rentals, please, when it gets to that point, go knock on those doors and let them know what's going on, because they probably are going to be the least informed. So we all need to help each other here. It's really important. But I just want to do a shout out to all the firefighters. They're doing an excellent job. Our CHPs are working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. Everyone's strained, but doing everything they can to make sure it does not come into the basin. And to this point, at this moment, we do not have any evacuation orders anywhere in the Tahoe Basin. And that just shows they're putting a dozer line around the northeast edge of this fire as we speak. So we're hoping that we've got some good news in the next day or two. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you very much. Bud, I know you had your hand up, and then Cindy, and then Shelley, please.
Oh, I would just like to thank Eric and Travis for taking their time today. We know you've got many, many things going on. I'd like to express thanks to all the fire guys. You know, we all knew these days were coming, and they have come, and they will come again. But you guys are doing, you know, great work, and thank you. You know, one thing that, you know, we talk about at the TRPA, and we have our Forest Health Fire Committee, but all of this underscores the importance of us approaching this and doing what we can to, I mean, we're not going to put out any fires, but maybe if we can help the fire guys and help the people in the basin by coming up with better fuels treatments programs. I mean, I know we have great ones now, and I'm not complaining about them, but, you know, we really need to pay attention to that. You know, for example, the West Side Fuels project that is, you know, on the drawing boards and moving along, but, you know, we need to do everything we can to make those things actually happen and happen quickly. And so, you know, when this burning season is past, which I hope is soon, but when it's past, I would certainly welcome anything that the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team members have for us that we, as in our regulations, can do, both in addressing our procedures, our requirements, but also whatever we can do to encourage our fellow authorities to help expedite these fuels treatment programs. I just think that's absolutely critical. You know, we all hear the news on incessantly on TV and the radio about climate change, whatever your belief is on climate change, something is happening here. We all know what needs to be done. The forests need to be cleaned up. We all know it's going to take millions, if not billions of dollars to do that. But, you know, we've got to get off our duffs and get this done. And so, you know, we really need to move on this. And that's all I have to say. But thank you. And again, thank you to the firefighters. They're doing a great job. Thank you.
Thanks, Bud. Cindy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I too want to thank all of our first responders, law enforcement, and our firefighters for the tremendous efforts they've put forth on all of these fires. This entire state seems to be lit up, at least the northern part. And I know resources are very, very tight. I just really appreciate that. I had a question. Because we similarly in Placer County have a voluntary sign up for Placer Alert that is there to inform people to receive text messaging. But when I was recently in Reno, I was getting what I think are WEA alerts from the Dixie Fire for some evacuations. And that was coming to my cell phone. Obviously, I'm not signed up for anything in Reno, but was down there as a day visitor, like many might be in reverse. And so I just wanted to ask about the use of, I think it's called WEA, and I'm sure you all know about it, but I wasn't aware of it, but I was receiving alerts on my cell phone. I'm not sure if Eric or Travis, if you could educate us on that process.
So I can educate you a little bit. It's a very similar system to our side, and I believe Douglas also has the same system. There's a couple systems that there are. First, there's a sign-up based system, which is like yours, and that is more of a code red system is what we call it here. And that's what we want people to sign up for because that's area specific. You sign up when you show your address and your phone number, and you can get alerted based on that region. Now, what you're talking about is something that's considered reverse 911 or what we call IPAWS. And that's a geographic system. So basically, if you circle somewhere on a map, you can send an alert to all those people. And that's great for, say, tourists that are in the area, that we can send something out to them where they're maybe code red won't pop up because they're not signed up for that. But we want them to get out now, and we send them an alert. The inherent problem with a geographic system, especially in our area, is that there's bleed over. So you may be not in that area, and you know, people in the Christmas Valley area can attest, even with this fire, they all of a sudden got notifications to evacuate, even though it wasn't in their area. And that's because of the bleed over. So they're great systems, but we on the law enforcement and fire side have to think about how we utilize those systems to make sure that the right people are getting the information at the right time.
Great. Well, I appreciate that. I understand the bleed over because obviously I was getting it when I was in Reno and it was 40 or 50 miles away up at the Dixie Fire was the evacuation area. But I think it's reassuring to many who question how will we let the visitors know? And you do have that technology and ability in an absolute disaster to push that messaging out to those who wouldn't have signed up. And I think that's important for our locals to know as well, that we will have the ability in those circumstances where we do need to reach our visitors, and they may not know the radio stations, they may not know the neighborhood they're in, but at least they're getting an alert and know to check in with some sort of messaging. Thank you. And again, I ditto all the comments about all the great work, and we just so appreciate everything that you all are doing.
Thank you, Cindy, and thank you for all that you are doing as well. Shelley, I think Shelley's up next.
Yeah, hi, thank you. And I want to echo all the comments about the steadfastness and the dedication of our law enforcement folks, in addition to the firefighting community. And I realize that because of the close proximity of the Calder Fire, most of the focus right now is on the south end of the lake. There is coordination between South Lake and Douglas, but are there similar plans in Placer County and Washoe? And if so, will we be receiving information on those evacuation plans at some point in the future? I know that people in Incline Village in particular were interested in viewing those plans, and I think it's important that everybody be cognizant of what the plans are and reassured by both firefighters and law enforcement folks that, you know, their concerns have been taken seriously.
Mark, if I could just do a quick response. Thank you, Shelley.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team is region-wide. It's North and South Shore. When we were trying to organize the presentation for the board today, it was a lot to ask for different law enforcement agencies to all try and get together and to come and share. But that would be really helpful, I think, that as long as we know that those organizations in those areas do have evacuation plans, and that they are making those available to the people who need to see them right now. But in the future, we'll do our best to see if we can get kind of more of a region-wide snapshot of this. But we're really grateful that we did get what we have today so far.
That's great.
Thank
Jeff.
You. And one further question. Any follow-up, Shelley? Sorry, go ahead,
yeah.
Shelley.
I don't remember signing up for the Amber Alert system, and yet I get alerts on my phone about abductions. And I'm wondering if there's any way we could piggyback on that system.
Absolutely. So that system is part of that WIA, the emergency alert system, and it's wireless emergency alert WIA. And how that gets, it's done by geofencing or geo. They send it out to a certain area, which those towers will hit a certain area. Of course, the lake is really, of course, we're special. We always say we are, right? So. If you're on the lake, you don't know when you call 911, it could actually go down to Sacramento and it could actually be dispatched from there because it's going to grab the nearest tower or grab the strongest signal. So anyways, those emergency alerts are broadcast wide and far. They're kind of like the dragnet. So believe it or not, you have to allow your phone to receive those emergency alerts. It's part they come default that they're already activated when your phone is. So if you don't change anything, it's automatic. They'll send those messages out, the emergency alerts, and they ping your phone and that you get that message. You can opt out of that. So if you feel that, you know, you want privacy or you don't want any messages, you can actually opt out of that on your phone. So the emergency alert systems on our side, and I don't know, I'm pretty sure it's going to be the same with the city. They go through, there's a gateway. Ours is in Douglas County through the emergency managers. Washoe County would be the same. We've got a real similar way that we would run and handle these evacuations. We would follow the incident command system, the ICS system. And so that's pretty much how that would be set up. And it's very similar throughout, not just our region, but, you know, all over. It's international. So those evacuations would happen. We do want to get that information out. We at the fire pit, which is the public information team, which Jeff was talking about earlier, we are putting together frequently asked questions. And we're going to, I believe the Tahoe Fund is going to put that up and probably share it over to TRPA, but it'll allow you to go in and find your early notification system and register. So no matter where you're at on the lake, you can go to this one frequently asked questions on what you can do to prepare for wildfire, and it'll send you to the different links and you can get signed up. So hopefully that explains those systems. I think Travis did a good job in talking about, you know, the one that's more specific is you have to register for it, and then they call you directly. So that's reverse 911 or the code red system. You need to sign up your address that you want to have notification. The problem we have sometimes in the basin is people are, you know, they own two homes or whatever, and they register their home in Sacramento or San Francisco. And so then it's registered there. So when that emergency alert is happening, it's happening in that area. So you need to make sure you put the pin on the map where you want it to be. So we say you've got to register this address in the basin to get those notifications. Really important.
That's great. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you very much. We'll go to John, and then we'll go to Barbara after John.
All right. Well, I want to thank Lieutenant Cabral and everyone down at the EOC. Thanks for the updates and all your hard work. I know people have been putting very long hours in there and on point. Just wanted to share a couple of other resources. I put one in the chat, but on Facebook every day at 5 p.m. Cal Fire AEU. That's the address. Host a briefing. Last night there was a special one on the Tahoe Basin portion that still lives there on Facebook. The city, we have resources in English and Spanish linked at the top of the website, and on our Facebook page, we also was interpreted into Tagalog yesterday. So I just encourage people to share those resources to make sure all folks in our community get the information they need in the way they can understand it. And then just for anyone out there who might be interested in this, the city either tomorrow or Friday will be handing out N95 masks at the rec center to help deal with this horrible air quality. So that's what I had to share.
Thank you very much, John. Appreciate that. Barbara.
Thank you. Listening to all of this and being somebody who lives in Las Vegas and comes to Carson, I see the smoke in the sky. I hear about the airports. I hear about the closures. But I just want to thank, and Sue made the best comments. I just want to really thank the first responders. I want to thank the firefighters, the police, everybody who's been involved. And just listening to this today, the efforts and what everybody's trying to do to save Lake Tahoe, just goes without even saying much of anything, I guess. But I just had to say thank you. And Mark, thank you for letting me talk. But I know I haven't done the extent of what some of our other colleagues have done, but we are witnesses to, you know, what smoke has caused in our different areas and know about that and the health issues that it causes. But I just wanted to thank the responders again, Sue couldn't have said it any better. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Barbara. Thanks so much for your comments. Okay, I don't see anybody else on the chat. So if anyone else would like to jump in, just raise your hand or just shout out. Anybody else? Jeff, did you have any closing comments before we let Eric and Travis go?
Yeah, for sure. So the Tahoe Fire and Fuels public information team is working on that kind of like overarching welcome to Tahoe, like here's what you need to know package that's going to be on the Take Care website. So that's a significant project that they're working on. So just to close everything out, I wanted to again thank Fire Marshal Eric Gavon for joining us today and for taking his time, making himself available, and for his continued representation to the APC. But also, special note to Lieutenant Cabral and to Chief Savakul. Thank you for trying to make it, and Lieutenant Cabral, thank you very much. And I just wanted to make a special note that we are always incredibly proud and grateful of our local athletes. For those of you who don't know, before his career with the police department, Travis was a local star who went as a free skier, won the World Cup, and represented the U.S. in the Olympics. So really, really a pleasure to have you here with us.
Excellent. Thanks, Jeff. And at this point in time, unless Travis or Eric would like to say anything in closing, we're going to go to public comment.
So the one thing I just have to say, and I think Ms. Noesel brought up a great point. You know, we're all locals here. We all have questions. Looking at maps, looking at information on how we can prepare really doesn't solve that need to want that information. You know, what are we doing? How are we notifying people? All those are great questions. And really, as Ms. Noesel said, she saw three officers just today in her neighborhood. That's something that we're doing. We have 30, 40 plus law enforcement on our side just today alone. And they're going around to our neighborhoods and they're getting a lay of the land. We pair one of our officers up with them who knows our geographical area and can prepare them. So if we do go into that next phase, that everyone knows exactly what to do. They're getting counts on people that are leaving. Hey, I'm leaving. And they know, you know, how much they're going to need at the time of an evacuation when we have this time to prepare so we can get everything flushed through as quickly as possible. So it's that, you know, that personal connection. And that's what we want to do here is to try to create that personal connection. The people in the city, you're not seeing that as much yet, but if that does turn into a warning stage, you're going to get that same information. And we want to do it in a timely manner.
Great. Again, thank you so much. Okay, at this point, we will go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on these agenda items, please raise your hand now in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff, and I'll turn it over to Catherine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll give members of the public just one more minute if they'd like to raise their hand.
I'll just correct myself. Travis was a mogul skier. He was a competitive mogul skier, not a free skier. Sorry, Travis.
Excellent.
Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Great. We will deem public comment closed. And if there are no further comments, this was just informational only. And so we will jump back up in the agenda to the item 6A, administrative matters. Resolution recognizing former governing board member Casey Beyer, governor of California appointee. Information on this item can be found on page 143. As a reminder of the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. At this point in time, staff has prepared a resolution that I would like to read for Casey and all of the incredibly valuable experience and contributions that he made to the Tahoe Basin. So it's entitled Tahoe Regional Planning Agency TRPA Resolution Number 2021, Resolution Recognizing Former Governing Board Member Casey Beyer, Governor of California Appointee. Whereas Casey Beyer is a native of Northern Nevada whose family owned property in Tahoe for two generations. And whereas Casey's passion to serve Lake Tahoe region goes back to his mother, Betty Brown Beyer, who, as the Northern Nevada director of U.S. Senator Howard W. Cannon, worked on the first memorandum of understanding in the late 1960s that eventually led to the creation of the TRPA. And whereas Casey's roots extended across state lines with his service first to California State Senator Tom Campbell as the interim chief of staff and district administrator in the early to mid-1990s and later for U.S. Congressman Tom Campbell as chief of staff and California director until 2000. And whereas Casey brought to his tenure at TRPA an impressive resume of leadership as a 30-year veteran of public policy development with public, private, and nonprofit sector experience in Nevada, California, and Washington, D.C. And whereas Casey has faithfully served the Tahoe region and the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency for nearly 12 years, from September 2009 through June 2021, as the California Governor's appointee, office appointee across three governor's administrations and both parties, and served as chair of TRPA's governing board from January 2015 through December 2016. And whereas Casey is a native Nevadan and a California governor appointee, always brought his unique bi-state perspective and his good-heartedness to the board, where he could reach across the aisle or state line to seek advice and unite the mutual interests about the lake's environment while enhancing the economic vitality of the lake. And whereas during Casey's tenure, he participated in an expansive set of policy-making achievements for the Tahoe region, including the 2012 region plan update, implementing changes to the development rights system in 2015 to incentivize environmental redevelopment, the shoreline plan adopted successfully in 2018 after 30 years of contested tries, and the first ever new threshold standard to link transportation and sustainable community goals, among a myriad of other groundbreaking decisions. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Governing Board of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency does hereby express its sincere and deep gratitude to Casey Beyer for his years of service to the Lake Tahoe region and wishes him well in his future endeavors, both in and beyond the Lake Tahoe region, passed and adopted by the Governing Board of Tahoe Regional Planning Agency this 25th day of August, 2021. Okay, let me jump back here. One second. Okay, at this point in time, I'd love to hear from my colleagues, from the board members, and from staff, any comments, any words of gratitude, any words of thanks, memories involving Casey. And Bill, I see your hand is raised. Please.
Well, I always had a lot of fun balancing Casey and Clem as the three public members from California at one time. But Casey, I think it's well stated here. He did have a bi-state perspective. He was always very concerned about how the board could work together, the collegiality of the board. And I think he was one of the real leaders and kind of providing the glue necessary for the years that I've been on the governing board, that allowed us to work together and accomplish many of the things that are set forth in the latter part of his resolution, that last paragraph. I don't know, is Casey on or am I just talking to all of you about it? But Casey, I certainly enjoyed it, and I certainly enjoyed, I appreciated your concerns about things that happened to me personally. And I wish you the very best in Santa Cruz. You take it easy. Bye.
Yes. And Casey is on, by the way, and we're going to give him an opportunity to talk, but only after all of us have the opportunity to talk about him. Hi, Casey. So further comment regarding Casey. Shelley, please.
Hey, Casey. Well, you know, when I got wind of the fact that Casey was thinking of stepping down, I was obviously a little distraught. I emailed him and reminded him that he had made kind of an informal commitment to make this a lifelong appointment. And obviously he's declined, and I know that he has other important things to accomplish. But I was really, in response to my email, I was really impressed by the fact in reply he produced a long litany of everything that he, all of the initiatives he participated in as part of his response to my comments. So obviously, you know, not only does he have a phenomenally good memory, but I mean, that's an indication, an illustration of how deeply involved he was and how seriously he took his role as a member of the TRPA governing board. And I know it's already been said, but one of the things that that I've always admired about Casey is that not only does he have a very, you know, agreeable personality, but you know, he really has a refreshing outlook on issues, and he just illustrates what we can all accomplish as reasonable people working for a common cause. And as you probably remember, Casey was my VP choice, and it was an easy choice for me to make based on the fact that he is so affable and so committed and has a very ingratiating way about him. So Casey, you will be missed. I'm sure you won't miss us as much as we miss you, but you take care and enjoy the rest of your life.
Thank you, Shelley. That's wonderful. Appreciate it. Anybody else?
Yes, this is Barbara.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Mark. And thank you very much for letting me say something about Casey. I am just thrilled that I was on the board at the time that Casey was on the board with us. And I want to thank Casey, as my last person had stated, how much fun it was to have him on the board. And it was. I learned a lot from you, Casey. I also want to tell you how much I appreciated your bipartisanship of both states. Half the time I couldn't tell who was from California and who was from Nevada, because everybody thought of the lake as one, not as two separate entities. And so I appreciated where he was always coming from. But I wanted to thank you for everything that you taught me, everything that you did, all the times you chaired the different committees. But I think you're absolutely right in saying that Casey knew, and knew Tahoe, knew what we were talking about, what the issues were. And again, I learned a lot from you, Casey. I want to thank you. And Mark, thank you for bringing this forward. And thanks to California for putting you in and putting you on the board. So thank you very much, sir. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Barbara. I appreciate it. Would anybody else like to jump in? Yes, Bud, please. Yes,
Bud. Casey, I see you on TV now, finally. But I would just like to thank you, Casey, for all you've done. You were so welcoming to me when I started on the board, and you were always there to answer questions and always there to give me the insights and always there to come up with a funny line. And so I really do appreciate what you did for me personally, and I echo all the comments that have been made so far as to what you've done for the TRPA, the two states, and the country. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bud. Jim.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Hey, Casey, I'd like to say, just add on to all the kind words that have already been spoken. I was, Casey selected me as his vice chair back when he was the chair, and I had the honor of serving as his vice chair during that time. And Casey, I learned a lot from you tremendously. It always struck me a couple of things. I mean, there's been comments regarding, your perspective, a bi-state perspective. I know that whenever I talked with you, even more than a bi-state perspective, it was always a Tahoe first perspective. And I learned a lot, being your vice chair. And, I also think it was a bit of a difficult time for you to be chair. We were a couple of years into the RPU being adopted, and there were some kinks to be worked out. And I think your sense of humor, your steady hand, really served the agency in a tremendous capacity, in addition to all of the initiatives that you worked on. I am disappointed that you're not on the board anymore, particularly because I like working with you, but also that's where I get all my Santa Cruz gossip. And so next time I go back to my old stomping grounds at Santa Cruz, Casey, I fully expect you to have solved all of the traffic problems and all of the transportation issues facing the Monterey Bay and Santa Cruz County. And I look forward to seeing you in that capacity.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Oh, yeah, Sue, please.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, Casey, I'll just kind of echo what Jim said as a Monterey person. I really enjoyed all of your conversations we had about what was going on in Santa Cruz and your great conversations we had about what was going on, how we could apply that up here in Tahoe, and you will be sorely missed. And I do miss you. It was always fun to sit down and chat with you about issues our commonalities of the areas. So thanks for all your work that you've done, and we'll miss you.
Thank you. Thanks, Sue. Okay. I guess it's me and then it's Joanne. So Casey, first, thank you for your family's contributions, including your mother's. We really appreciate all of the hard work that your entire family has put into this. Secondly, you and I were fortunate enough to have some things in common and relationships outside the board, including our Reno High School alma mater. And that was always fun to talk about. It was always something that we could fall back on during any conversation or any issue that we might have together. And I really appreciated that. You also introduced me to a number of people in your circle for other projects, whether they be science projects or social projects, other philanthropic projects. It's incredible how many people you know, how many people you introduced to me that had experience and were involved in the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. And for that, I will always be extremely thankful. You know, everyone's mentioned how valuable you've been to this board. And it is true. And the resolution is all true. And I hope that you take that resolution and that it's reaffirming for you with respect to the impact that you've made on this majestic place that we call Lake Tahoe. Thank you very much for your friendship, Casey. And Joanne?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Casey, I just want to speak on behalf of staff. I think Julie wants to say a few words following on, but I just want to thank you for your collegiality, for the dedication, for the tenacity of hanging in for 12 years. We know this board post is not for the faint of heart. And so first, I want to thank you for your kindness and advice to staff. Appreciate all the bipartisanship and the bi-state perspective. You've never been insular and you've always been willing to compromise. And I just recall one on the point of your dedication, it is absolutely uncompromised. I recall the one circumstance in particular when you made an unbelievable personal sacrifice at a time of family crisis where you showed up for a 14-hour hearing so that our quorum and our votes would be complete. And so I just thank you for everything you've ever done for us, Casey, and we'll miss you. Thank you. And Julie, I don't know if you want to join in here.
Oh, thank you, Joanne, and hello, Casey, and fellow board members, Julie Reagan. I just wanted to, again, echo these comments, but say also thanks for your support of staff over the years, building on Joanne's comments, and your passion for cycling. You brought a group of cyclists up here, and I remember we were all making, I think, peanut butter sandwiches in the lunchroom for a really big group that you brought up, and our team really got hands-on involved with a lot of your personal causes and passion that aligned perfectly with the direction of the agency to make Tahoe more bikeable and walkable in our regional plan. So our staff have really, truly valued your leadership and your guidance and your friendship. And we're just so grateful. So thank you again.
Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, Julie. And if nobody else has comments, I would love to turn the meeting over to Casey. One last time, he served the chair position so well. I'd like to hand that back over to him for a few minutes.
Thanks, everyone. I'm humble, so I got to put my hat on so I don't lose it. This, you know, 12 years seems like a long time, but when you do it for the lake, it's not. And Shelley, I'm not going anywhere. There's an old saying in Nevada that you can't take the lake out of a Nevadan. Well, even if I'm in California, I'm still a native Nevada, and Lake Tahoe's home. You're right. There's a lot of things that we did up for the 12 years that I was on the board, but I take a look at what the board does as a team. I played college sports, and basketball was my passion, and I played point guard. But the team didn't succeed if you didn't pass the ball. And so each one of the board members that I've worked with, and there's about 45 of them over the last 12 years, each one of them played a respective relationship in terms of developing policies, programs, and projects that were instrumental to the agency. Bill, I know you and your fun comments about working with Clem and I. Obviously, we came to issues that from a different perspective, but at the end of the day, we were pretty close in alignment. I have to tell a story about Secretary John Laird when he became Secretary under Governor Brown. And he called me into his office and said, hey, you got to be on the team. And I said, well, what team are you referring to? And he says, well, you know, the governor's team. And I said, well, I think I'm on a different team and the governor's part of it, and that's called the Lake Tahoe team. And he was kind of taken aback. He said, well, you don't always support what the governor wants. And I said, John, with all due respect, take a look at our voting records. And there was only one time in the 12 years that Clem and I were on the board, he was on it for, I think, 10 or 10 and a half years. There was only one issue that we disagreed on. We came to the issues in our own perspective way. And I always thought of it, what's the best for the lake? Not what's best for Nevada, what's best for California, what's best for the lake. And it really was highlighted by, you know, when we did the 2012, you know, 12-12-12 is a date in memory. If you all, anyone that's been around the board for a while, Shelley would remember that. I think Jim would remember that. Bill, I think you had just come on the board about that time. But that was a significant lift of a collaborative working group led by Joanne and her team that pushed us over the finish line. And I think the lake is better for it. I remember one of my first trips up as a board member, Julie asked me, says, will you come and do a tour with us? And so I hopped in her car. We went around the lake and we went over to the site of the Angora fire. And it was basically a year and a half after the fire. And I learned more in that tour about South Lake Tahoe than I had my entire life of living around the lake. So it's a significant ability to, you know, put our differences behind us and focus on what's common good. And when we do that, I think we succeed. And this is an excellent group of people that now represent the board. I don't know some of you, but your hands are full, but you got a teammate that's right next to you. So depend on them. And if anybody needs any assistance from me, please reach out. I did talk to the governor's office when I gave notice. They called me personally and thanked me for my service. And they asked me if and when they go about appointing California governor appointees, if I would be willing to talk about what the job includes, the requirements, and a little bit about the, you know, the politics of Lake Tahoe and the people of Lake Tahoe. And we all talk about, you know, the Colbert Blue Lake, you know, and the pristine, protecting the, you know, the environment, the wildfires have really devastated that. And it's sad to see, you know, the browning of our skies because of the fires. In Santa Cruz, we went through that last year, the CZU complex fire burned more acres in Santa Cruz and Monterey County than ever before. And 900 families lost their homes. And so we're still dealing with it. But the experiences that I've learned is that when people, you know, stand tall and work together, you can overcome almost any obstacle. So I just want to deeply appreciate what I call the Joanne, the John, Julie, Jeff. I think you have to have a J in your name to work at TRPA. But you have a wonderful team, and I've worked with almost everyone on your staff over the years. And my hat's off to all that you do. And I stand ready to help in any capacity you think is necessary. So, Mark, thank you. Thank you for recognizing our alumni, you know, Reno High School. I preceded you at that prestigious school, but I think you outdid yourself in terms of performing the standards. I remember that the alumni building wasn't even a thought when I was in high school. Now it's like a pivotal area where alum can hang out. Yep. But again, thank you for your service. Thank you for your friendship. Bud, we didn't get to know each other very well, but I always had a real pleasure talking to somebody with your talents and your legal ability. And of course, I was a classmate and a competitor of the Toronto Brothers that I played sports with growing up. So it was, seems like it was old home week when I got to sit next to you at a board meeting. And Cindy, thank you for your willingness to take time out of your day when I brought a group of Santa Cruzans up to tour the lake. It was a fascinating 2.5 days, and it was really a reflection of what is similar to Lake Tahoe that is in Santa Cruz. Very, very similar ecosystems. We work hard to protect the Monterey Bay and Santa Cruz Mountains. You and I and the board work hard to protect the lake and the people around the lake. So there's a real synchronism. And when we completed that stay, we were able to go up to the gondola up top of the Heavenly. And the view of the lake from that sighting was wonderful. And my colleagues in Santa Cruz said this is one of the best community leadership visits they've ever done. And we've been doing them for about 15 years. So hopefully I'll have a chance to return and do that again. But again, I want to thank every one of you. And I know that Joanne and John and Julie are not on on the screen, but please give my very, very best to your team. It's a great group of people to work with. And so with that, I'll say thank you and goodbye.
Thank you so much, Casey. Stay in touch.
Will do.
Really appreciate it. Okay. Okay, we'll now go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on these agenda items, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. I'll turn it over to Catherine for public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, we will deem public comment closed. And at this point in time, I would like to request a motion with respect to the resolution. Is anybody willing to offer that motion?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt the resolution as presented, honoring Casey Beyer as a former member of the governing board.
Thank you. We have a motion. Can we take the roll call, Maria?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos? Mrs. Sagaski?
Absolutely yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
100% yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Aye.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes, yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
And I'll vote for me and Bud, yes.
Yes, I vote my non-vote yes.
And Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Okay. So we are moving on to the appeals. We only have one of those. One was resolved. So we'll move to item 8A, appeal of hearings officer approval of Stock Johansson new single parcel pier 5568 North Lake Boulevard, Placer County, California, assessor parcel number APN 116-220-049, TRPA file ERSP 2020-0074, appeal file number admin 2021-0014. You can find the information on this item on page 147 of your packet. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. Before we begin this appeal, I'd like to ask if any of the board members have had ex parte communications with any party in the appeal? And if so, would you please disclose those? And you can raise your hand. Cindy, please.
Thanks, Mark. Yes, I've known the appellants for many, many years. I visited their property with them and have had discussions with their counsel. They've briefed me on the content of their appeal.
Thank you, Cindy. I appreciate it. Anyone else?
Mark, this is Shelley. I did receive an email from Greg Lean representing the appellant.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Shelley. And I think just for the record, I think most, if not all of us, might have received that email because I did too. Anybody else? I don't see anybody else on the screen. Is there anybody else that's on the phone? If so, please just chime in. Please let us know. Hearing none. Okay, John, is there anything about what was discussed that we need to further identify? Are we good to go?
Good to go.
Okay, thanks so much. Okay. John, would you please give the report from the legal committee this morning?
I will, Mr. Chair, but may I do it after giving a quick introduction to the item to give a little context?
Absolutely. Please, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Governing Board members. This is an appeal from the issuance of a permit by the hearings officer after a public hearing for a new pier in Placer County on the California side. Because it's an appeal of a permit issuance, it is similar to a revocation hearing. And that's why you'll see the vote when we get to the vote comes forward to you with the requirement that if you're going to overturn the appeal, it will take 5 California votes and 9 votes overall. There are really 3 key issues in this appeal, and really they condense down to 2. The first one has to do with the navigation finding and the compatibility finding, which really rests on whether or not the new pier constitutes a navigational issue compared to or causing a navigational issue to the existing pier to the south, and then whether or not there is the necessary finding for additional length was appropriately made to extend the pier another 12 feet out to the pier headline. There was presentations by myself and counsel for the appellant, as well as an expert witness, and then counsel for the permittees, the Stock Johansons, and their consultant as well. As a result of those presentations, the governing board had some a question or two, and then voted unanimously to deny the appeal. So in that case, it would be when the motion comes, we need a positive motion to grant the appeal, but then you would vote no. Their recommendation is to vote no and deny the appeal. Can I have the next slide, please? This is the general geographic area. I'm going to be relatively brief and then allow you to hear from the parties themselves and then come back around after that point. This is where the little box on the right-hand side is the location of the pier. The pier would be located between the two existing piers. Next slide, please. And this is the schematic, the site plan of the new pier, which is in the middle, and then the Harash Pier, which is off to the left side of this diagram, or the south side. And you'll see that the Harash Pier sticks into the, it's an older pier and was developed prior to TRPA permitting, and it sticks into the setback, but yet the minimum dimensions that are required by our code are more than met. with the setback from an existing structure on both sides. So it kind of splits the difference here between the two different piers. The key finding, can I have the next slide, please? The key finding that we're going to be talking about is this navigation and safety finding. The TRPA must find that the project will not adversely impact navigation or create a threat to public safety pursuant to the determination of agencies with jurisdictions over the navigable waters in the basin. Now, the way that this finding was made in this particular case was that we had both brought this matter to the Shore Zone Review Committee, at which point neither Coast Guard nor the Army Corps of Engineers objected. And then we also got specific input, as you read in the staff report, that preliminarily they did not see any major issues. And so the staff issued the permit, the hearings officer issued the permit based on a condition that would require, before any project is put in, to receive all required permits, which would be a core permit. And the core permit would be the determination of that agency as to whether or not there is any inappropriate impacts to navigation or to public safety. Really, this is a debate about the timing of that determination and not whether or not TRPA can make the finding, because we can make the finding based on a conditional permit, but at what point does the determination need to be made? Does it need to be made prior to TRPA action, as the appellants will argue, or as TRPA has consistently applied this provision, that it would it can be conditional based on the receipt prior to construction of the determination of Army Corps? Next slide, please. This is the compatibility finding, which I said in this case really condenses into the navigation finding, because the objections on this site really have to do for compatibility, not with the appearance, but rather the function of the pier between the two other piers. Next slide, please. And then finally, we have the extra length finding here. And the really, what this is you can get up to 15 feet of additional length if you show that the additional length is necessary for the functionality of the pier. In other words, whether or not it adds function, and then whether or not the average grade of the bottom is greater than 3%. Here, there is no dispute as to whether or not there's a grade greater than 3%. So the focus is on whether or not, or the interpretation of the additional length is necessary for the functionality of the pier. It doesn't say for the function of the pier. So it's not an absolute standard. It's whether or not the additional length will add the necessary functionality of the pier. And you'll hear both sides talk about whether or not, given the substrate and the low water conditions, that extra length is necessary. The hearing officer found that because of the depth at low water, there would be the additional length is necessary, the functionality of the pier, and made the finding. And that's all in my presentation with that. And Chair, you can turn it over to counsel for the applicants.
Great, please. So Greg Lean, I assume, is with us.
Hi there, greetings to all of you this afternoon. I find myself in agreement with your counsel as to the issues, at least, which is a good start. So let me go into our view of it. You'll hear from the other side and judge for yourself.
Just to be clear, there's a 10-minute time period for purposes of this hearing. If you go over a couple minutes, that will be okay. But I just wanted to remind you that up front, both you and Greg Gatto.
Hello. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll launch right into it. I'm aware we're all under time pressure here, and I won't waste your time. So in this particular case, the applicant is going for the maximum pier, maximum length, maximum width, a boat lift on it, and additional length. Additional length, as John said, is really the crux of this, both in terms of the adverse impact on navigation and public safety, compatibility, and as to additional length. That's really where the beef is in this. What the applicants are doing is to put this extremely large structure for a single-use pier in the minimum possible size area. And you could see that quite graphically in the staff reports. By the way, if whoever's in charge of putting the photos up, if we could put up that slide again showing subsection G on navigation and safety, I think that would be helpful for us all to look at as we go through this and look at whether John's theory of how this can be done can really be done. So as you can see here, TRPA has to find, and that's a present tense, right? In the present tense, TRPA must find that the project will not adversely impact navigation or create a threat to public safety pursuant to this determination. Now, determination is defined not in your code, but by the dictionary as the act of deciding definitively and firmly. And with that, we've got the information in the record. You on the legal committee heard that. Basically, it was just an offhand comment. And the key thing here is that the applicants chose not to make application to the only agency that has expertise in public safety and navigation, and that's the Army Corps of Engineers. They chose not to apply. And in a moment, I'm going to turn it over to our expert. But when you look at this, again, TRPA has to find in the present, I think, if you look at the plain meaning of these words here, it has to find in the present, pursuant to a determination, again, that's in the present tense, of agencies with jurisdiction that can only mean the Army Corps. It means not a determination. You know, that only means Army Corps. This isn't a determination by your staff, a hearings officer, your legal counsel. It can only mean a present tense decision by Army Corps. I want to introduce, because we are short of time, our expert, Kevin Rookie. Kevin is a veteran of 34 years with the Army Corps of Engineers. He was hosting managing staff for Tahoe. And many of you on the board know him and have worked with him, I think, since 1994 and until his retirement. He's really well-known to all consultants and highly respected in the area. So, Kevin, if you want to get on board here and give us your perspective on the information that was given to TRPA staff and whether we can call that a determination. Kevin, are you on?
Yes. Can you all hear me? Hello? Can everybody hear me?
Yes, Kevin, we can hear you. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Well, the biggest thing, one of the issues that came up is the coordination effort. I know there's been changes since I retired in 2009, but the coordination that was set up during the TRPA compact has resulted in the Shore Zone Review Committee has always been pretty, I'm going to say standard, that we didn't move forward any agency until that process of approving the project was done. And even if the final permit was not done by either agency, then we would either hold them in abeyance until everybody got it done, because we didn't want to issue permits that were going to have to be redone by to another standard for everybody to go through and have to go through the whole process again. But two things that really kind of hit me is that they talk about going out to the pierhead line. Pierhead line was not a line that was just determined. It was discussed in depth for years until they finally came up with 6219 as a safe elevation of water or of elevation of the lake bottom that would be above the lake level 6223, which was for 4 feet of draft underneath a normal boat that was going to be up against a pier. So if a pier went out to 6219, that was justified as enough draft for that boat. To just arbitrarily put it out to the pier headline in many of these areas was not drawn to the 6219 because existing piers already were there, and this is around the lake. So rather than have this swaying line in and out on the lake at 6219, if you had an area where you had one pier out and the other one kind of lined up to it, the line was drawn straight. So the pier headline really wasn't the safe navigation beyond that point, but inside that point also has to be considered. And when you put a pier in between two existing piers, just the mere presence of the new pier impacts navigation of the two owners upshore and downshore for their safe navigation. Also, every pier up at Lake Tahoe can be used for safe harbor by anyone in the public. Any person who has boating experience up at Tahoe knows that you can get caught in a storm very quickly, very easily. And when you put another pier in between two that for the last half century have had 200 feet of access in there, you cause an impact. Now, how adverse that is, we don't know. And that's what the Corps analyzes. The Corps, in their process, looks at not only the dimensions of the pier, but we pay particular attention to the location, general design, and if the obstructions can result from both the existence of the structure, particularly in conjunction with similar facilities in the immediate area. The district engineer will inform applicants of the hazards involved and encourage safety in location design and operation. As a result of the construction of these discussions, the district engineer's evaluation proceeds. The district engineer may require. Yes.
Yeah. Just real briefly, I notice I'm coming up on 8 minutes on my counter, and I want to get the issue of.
I contacted the Corps of Engineers office.
Yeah, thanks.
About her statement, her recollection was that she was at in the meeting, and she said that yes, from what she has reviewed, which was not a formal application to the Corps, but just the TRPA drawings, that she had no concern at this time. But she reminded the staff that the agency is the one who makes the determination and suggested that the applicant submit an application to the Corps as soon as possible. That was a year ago. They have not received anything since. In talking to the Coast Guard staff, Coast Guard is for search and rescue and for maintenance of navigation structures that have been put in place as determined by the Corps of Engineers. When they make a site visit, they're looking at, can they get in there to do a search and rescue? When I asked the Coast Guard staff if they were a novice mariner on a 30-foot boat in Tahoe, would that new pier between two large structures have the same impact? They responded back by sending it to their safe water safety office in San Francisco. I received an email back stating that that would be a navigational hazard and asking, could it be mitigated? From the staff of the Corps, they said yes, and it may need to be shortened. I can't make that call now, but that call could be there. So you may be issuing a permit, and I think the staff was a bit presumptuous in issuing the TRPA permit without it first calling the Corps and asking if they have any idea if it's going to be shortened or not. You're going to see this permit come back at you, possibly, if the Corps. And again, this is the first new pier that's been done in 40 years. I think it's going to go under pretty good scrutiny. My opinion, and if I was still the staff officer there, it would, because we are looking at, again, addition of additional structures that can cause that impact. So I guess in my opinion, I would have done more due diligence as staff instead of just responding to what one time statement was, especially from the lead federal agency, the Corps of Engineers, that makes the call for navigation and safety and for the length of a pier. They are the ones that are going to say, yes, that's proper, or yes, that's yes, it's not. They're going to make that call, and they're going to have that discussion with the applicant.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Kevin. I want to race through the last few points. I don't know if we have time to queue up the one-minute video. Mr. Bruce, may we do that?
Yes, you may.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. It kind of graphically points out, again, our problem with the project is really about the length. They don't need it for functionality. And when this starts to roll, you'll see why. This is a video of the bottom substrate in the area. What you're going to see is that this is exactly the same kind of substrate that's typical at Lake Tahoe, really at most of the near shore. It's feed and escape cover. You're looking here at the buoys that are at the pier headline as far as you could go out. We'll get underwater in a minute. I don't know why this isn't running smoothly. At least it doesn't appear to be. So I'll just talk over this while it'll be self-explanatory. We also have expert testimony from Brian Johnson. He's a 40 years marine engineer here at Tahoe, very well-known expert in navigational safety. And in his opinion, too, this does create a threat to safety because of the way boats have to go into the Hiroshi Boathouse. It's incompatible. That's the other thing we haven't had time to go into, but it's in the written materials. So, again, you can hear, see where the other diver is. That's about where the furthest inshore portion of the pier head will be. You can see the consistency of the bottom substrate. It's really not necessary. And by the way, just in anticipation of what the applicants may say, it's really the stern of the boat that is crucial for navigation. It's not the bow. So the stern comes in at the end. There's plenty of room. Kevin, isn't there plenty of room for that boat to be safely moored at 6219 in that location and to maneuver?
Yeah, yes. It seems that we have at 6219 with a lake elevation of 6223, you'd still have that 4 feet of draft, and that's more enough for the prop of a boat coming in, and when you lift it up, it should have ample room. The lake has not gone down below 6223 but a handful of years. And if it happens, it happens to everybody.
Right. Understood. So from our point of view, when you look at the words of subsection G's finding, there needed to be substantial evidence in the record. Again, there wasn't a determination in any dictionary sense of the word at that present time. You can't defer it on by condition of approval. That only invites what Kevin is talking about, where they're definitely in his, if you were in that chair, he would be pushing for a shorter pier as well, because it disrupts the navigational pattern that's been common for 50 years through that area, because you're plugging up that that hole with the largest pier that could possibly be approved. And this is going to force needless litigation, because while we're waiting for Army Corps, we've got to meet your 60-day statute of limitations. We don't want to go there. I think the only logical thing to do is really to continue this thing, bring the project back in its final form. I'm wrapping up right now. We could even agree if Army Corps shortens it up, we'll withdraw our appeal, and we don't have to get into all this. So this is the reason the applicant's failure to apply really should come back on them. They created their own hardship here and made it a very difficult situation for my clients. By the way, for the record, I just want to find out is Barbara Fostano's able to see our video presentation, or is she just entirely on the phone? Do we know?
Okay.
Anyway, if she isn't able to view this, then I guess since we need to have five Californians, I think we want to have a procedural objection there that she's not able to review the whole record. With that, I'll leave it there, and of course, be available for questions should you have any. Thank you very much for the additional time. I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Greg Gatto, please.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the Governing Board, Greg Gatto and Wyatt Ogilvie on behalf of the Johannessens. I think Mr. Marshall and staff, again, did an excellent job of summarizing why the hearings officer approval should be upheld, and the legal committee unanimously concurred with staff. I'd like to make a quick procedural point, and then I'll pass our presentation over to Wyatt Ogilvie for a brief overview of the project. Just for the record, appellants submitted new arguments that were not included in their statement of appeal just one day prior to the hearing. Pursuant to Section 11.4 of the Rules of Procedure, we object to this new argument and materials and contend appellants have waived the right to raise these new arguments in this hearing and in any subsequent litigation. And with that, I will turn it over to Wyatt.
Wyatt, I think you're on mute.
Why is your phone on mute as well?
There he is. Okay, we still can't hear you, Wyatt. Still can't hear you.
Let's try now.
Perfect.
All right, great. I was on my phone for connectivity.
No worries. The floor is yours.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the Governing Board. I want to reemphasize Greg's point of I appreciate staff of a thorough staff summary prior to going to hearings officer and a concise summary of appeal. Of the appeal is before you today. Catherine, if you go to slide 2, please. In light of the comments by the appellant and the summary by Mr. Marshall, I'll focus on 3 primary items, the process, timing of the approval process, navigational safety, and the proposed pier length as it relates to its functionality. I'll strive to be brief, but as my wife would tell you if she was here, not always my strong suit. In terms of the process, our office has represented 4 other pier modification expansion projects just within this segment of the lake along Blick Point within the last 10 years. And all of our pier projects that our office has pursued regulatory approvals across the multi-jurisdictional framework throughout the basin, we always initiate the TRPA review process first. We've done that through differing periods of shoreline plans through time. We obviously had the original 1987 code. We had a 2008 plan adopted that was challenged legally, vacated by the court. And we had an interim policy and procedure up until the adoption of the current shoreline plan. It was finally not challenged by litigation. That's the one that we work under today. The premise of that is, in our experience with numerous pier projects and the complexity of the relation of the other considerations of the code, TRPA code, scenic provisions and that changing regulatory framework through iterations of different plans, it is most often that we see changes need to occur through the course of TRPA review. In the interest of the efficiency for our client and the process, we have decided, and we continue to do so, to get substantively, if not all the way through to approval in the TRPA process prior to making those other regulatory applications. Compounding that is that the core process changed meaningfully last year. They previously made a de minimis finding for pile driving in the Lake Tahoe that there were no impacts, and they started requiring archaeological and cultural resource studies, which we had not embarked on until very recently this August. If you could go to slide 5, please, Catherine. And essentially, so if applications are made to those other agencies and we have to make a modification in design in order to attain TRPA's approval, we're making those modifications across 5 regulatory applications as opposed to getting into after which we concurrently submit to the other 4 regulatory entities. The Shoreline Review Committee process was enveloped to try to bring any threshold issues that would lead to repetitive changes across those regulatory entities back and forth to negate that. And as the appellant has said, there were no stark issues raised, and we will pursue an approval with the Army Corps of Engineers. Sorry, let's see. I think I wanted you to go one more slide, please, Catherine. This is a picture taken from offshore with the Hirosh property to the left of frame. In the center of frame, you can barely see the back in the trees, the Stock Johannesson residence, and then the residence to the right that is visible is pertinent to the other boathouse. If you could go to slide 9 now, or let's see, we are at 9. Next slide, please, Stephanie.
If you go all the way down to the plans, please, Catherine, that's actually slide. There you go. Thank you very much. So it's important to note that the Hirosh Pier does encroach into the projection line setback. It's a non-conforming structure. The Army Corps is a public agency, in my experience, is primarily concerned with the navigation of public waters of the U.S., not the navigational convenience of a private party. At the direction of the applicant, we designed the pier to hug the northerly setback to the greatest extent possible, to hug that setback to provide the greatest distance for the navigational benefit to Hirosh. The design standards adopted by the board require 40-foot separation, and by that placement of the pier, we're providing for nearly twice that standard to the extent of approximately 80 feet. If you could go to the next slide, please. The shoreline analysis under the EIS determined that new piers primarily result in navigational hazards in areas where there currently are no piers, tying to that public navigational concern. Existing private piers and structures drive navigational patterns, and therefore clustering private piers reduces navigational impacts. That was within the draft EIS that was adopted by this board. If you could go ahead forward to slide 14, please, Catherine. We did solicit comments and feedback prior to hearings, officer, and I think it's important to note that through the review of the Shoreline EIS and adoption of the corresponding design standards by the board, there were no comments provided regarding the design standards that we've adhered to under the proposed pier project.
If you go to the next slide, please, Catherine. The rocky caricature of Flick Point and the bathymetry or lake bottom at this project site illustrates the premise under which this provision was adopted, the provision in terms of additional length. If you go ahead and, well, I'll reread that just because this is, I think, the focal point of the matter. So the project applicant demonstrates that the additional length is necessary for the functionality of the pier, and the average grade at the lake bottom beneath the pier is a minimum of 3%. We clearly exceed the 3%. That's not a point of discussion. If you can go forward to the next slide, please, Catherine. The additional length is absolutely necessary at the location of the proposed pier. The hearings officer approved the 12 feet of additional length commensurate with the adjoining pier and boathouse structures that you see here out to the pier headline. There's, if you can go to the next two slides forward, please. That's the lake bottom. This picture is a picture of Mr. Johansson standing. If we reduce the length inward by 12 feet, and if you can picture the 30-foot length of a conforming standard pier head, if we bring that pier head in an additional 12 feet, the bow of the boat or the end of that pier head would be where this picture was taken just in recent weeks at current lake levels.
Ten minutes has passed, and I'll give you a couple more minutes to wrap up.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap up. I'm going to pass it to Greg in just a moment. If you, Catherine, could go back to the design, please, which is slide 9. As you can see, as you approach, because of the rocky caricature Flick Point, if we didn't have this additional length to be commensurate with the adjoining structures, the pier head would be at a shallower depth to where in periods of low water, we would have, we would be limited to today at a period of low water, we'll have 3 feet of draft at the bow of the boat at the terminus of the pier head, and that would reduce down to within, you know, a depth of just slightly greater than a foot. And so I think for the appropriate functionality and safety of navigation in and out of this pier, the additional length is absolutely necessary. Greg has a couple concluding comments, and then we'll wrap it up. Appreciate it.
Thanks. There's about a minute and a half here, Greg.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair Bruce. I think, you know, just to wrap this up, appellant's argument regarding navigation and public safety amounts to nothing more than speculation regarding how a third-party public agency may act on a future permit. Quite simply, the pier cannot be built unless the Johannessons receive approval from the Corps, and on that basis alone, the finding made by the hearings officer is correct. Appellants have submitted zero evidence of how the proposed pier, with almost twice the setback required by code, results in navigation or safety impacts. And on those bases and the bases that we've submitted, we would respectfully request that the board adopt the unanimous recommendation of the legal committee to deny the appeal.
Okay, thanks everybody for presenting. I'm going to get it back to John. John, I know you wanted to save a little bit of your time to go through a few things for us after. I know Shelley also has a few questions, and I want to get to Shelley as well after John, you've followed up.
I just want to make certain that I emphasize the recommendation of the committee. And to make certain that all board members heard what I thought I said is that the committee unanimously recommended that the governing board deny the appeal. And committee members, if they choose, can speak to their reasons for making that recommendation. And otherwise, I'll be here for questions.
Thank you. I'm going to bring it back to the board. And Shelley, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mark. A couple of questions for John. I just want to get these answers on the record, John. Is it uncommon for TRPA to take a lead agency role in the processing of pier permit applications?
I wouldn't say it's a lead agency role. It's we basically call all the jurisdictions together in the shore zone review committee to try to help facilitate everyone's processing and to minimize any overlap that the applicant might have. I think it's fair to characterize that most of the changes to peers come through our process rather than any of the other process. So to some degree, it makes sense for us to, particularly in these COVID times, to move ahead first. And therefore, I think we take the lead role in that sense.
Okay. And I think that everybody is acknowledged. I know the appellant has acknowledged. I think we would acknowledge that obviously we're not experts when it comes to navigational issues. But we did, as a facilitator of this process, we did obviously reach out to the Corps and ask for input during our process, even though we, as I stated earlier, are not experts in the area of navigation and rely on the other permitting processes to address any concerns that there might be in connection with the accessibility of the dock being proposed or to adjoining structures, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. The other assertion was that we somehow failed by not requiring a simulation. Are simulations typically required of peer projects if there are no extraordinary scenic implications?
No.
Okay. And I guess my last question for you, John, is that, you know, since TRPA's peer permit, if it's issued, is conditioned upon the receipt of all other permits from agencies with jurisdiction, can we, I'm assuming we can, ask the Corps for an expedited review within 60 days of an approval?
We can ask, but they are their own independent federal agency, and whether or not they accede to that is entirely within their discretion.
Okay, but there's no reason why we can't request it, right? I mean, they have already seen some preliminary documents related to this application, so we could request an expedited review, right?
We could, and we can make that request as soon as an application is filed.
Okay, and then I have a question for Greg Lean. Greg, are you still with us? Greg?
You might be on mute. It looks like he's trying to come on.
Okay.
What's that? You got it now?
Yeah, I've got it. I can hear you. Thanks, Greg. So I guess, Shelley. Kind of a hypothetical question. I mean, if you are reasonably confident that the Corps will support your position, what is the rationale for challenging the issuance of a conditional TRPA permit when it will likely be more expensive for your client to initiate litigation than to simply let the process play out?
I understand, and we've discussed that, but we feel there's a lot that can happen out there, and we want to preserve our legal remedies. That's my client's call, and we've discussed this extensively, but I appreciate where you're coming from, and I appreciate your idea of expedited review. I think that's an excellent one, and may first solve the need for litigation if we can get that feedback quickly.
Okay, thank you. That's all for
now. Thank you, Shelley. Cindy has questions.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Shelley addressed one of the critical points that I was going to ask, so I have a few others. And as I mentioned, and I want to make clear to the rest of the board members, I'm very familiar with this property. I've attended social events here. I've known the family for a long time, the appellant's property, and met with them to talk about a number of concerns, some of which weren't expressed today, including safety of the swimming area, the children's access in and out of the water. We have received public comments on that from others that use this area, because there is an adjacent parcel there that's commonly owned with another family, and they use that area. But my questions specifically to the legal committee, because I am so new to the board and wasn't part of the extensive work on the shore zone ordinance, do we look at the consistency, and staff or legal committee, do we look at the consistency of spacing of piers in the surrounding area? This was one of the issues raised early on, because as you see from the satellite view, most of the piers are more distant than this one will be around that front edge of that point.
I can take a first stab from staff's perspective and maybe call on Tiffany or Brandy McMahon, who is also, I think, on the line. But fundamentally, if it meets our setbacks, that's what TRPA decides as, okay, that meets the general setbacks. And then we leave it to the Corps to decide whether or not, if there's a reason that given the minimum setbacks, there is a safety concern. So that's how we generally treat the spacing. We don't compare it around the lake. The average spacing, for example, is 100 feet, and so therefore that's what we're going to be looking at for a density standard for this particular area. That was considered as part of the shore zone plan and was rejected in favor of the setback requirement and the minimum findings for navigability. So that we didn't bring that forward, that density standard that would look at, you know, the average density in a particular area that could not be exceeded.
Okay. And as far as the sequencing of the permitting, that was Shelley addressed that issue, and you adequately addressed that. I was also interested in the length of the pier question. Primarily, any findings we make necessitating this longer pier, and could staff or the legal committee discuss that?
I again can run through it from staff's perspective and then leave it to legal committee members if they would like to add additional information from their perspective. But fundamentally, what we're looking at is the bottom slope and the type of bottom there is as to whether or not the additional length is warranted. And in this case, it is a rocky bottom. You saw the photos of that. That as this bottom slopes away, it drops off right past the point of 6219, the increase, there's an increased drop off. So when you're looking at the 6219, and you're kind of looking at where the average boat is going to lay, it is within our discretion, we believe, that justifies the additional length given the substrate and the fact that at low water you're going to have some navigability concerns for the boat. And so therefore, in this case, there will be an increased functionality, we think significant as a result of the additional length because of the drop-off. You'll note that the 3% rule is in there in order to avoid a situation where the additional length does not drive additional navigability. And that's what we find here, that there's a 16% drop off. And so there is a significant gain in navigability or functionality as a result of the additional length to the pier headline.
Thank you, John. I don't think I have any other questions at this point.
Okay, thank you very much, Cindy. Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to staff and also to the presenters. We did hear this extensively at legal, and the only question I had of John, I'll ask it again, is if we issue our permit, does that in any way prejudice the Army Corps of Engineers permit?
No, it does not. So to be perfectly clear, they will act independently. and that finding will be complied with because they will only issue a permit for a pier that does not adversely affect navigation and safety. So just to reiterate, a pier cannot be built under this permit that's been issued that will adversely affect or be contrary to the determination of the Army Corps.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Thanks, John. I'll go to John, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions relate to the issue of navigability, the spacing between the piers. I mean, it was stated that the current Hirosh pier is non-conforming. Is that, John, because of the placement of the boathouse and boat lift on the pier?
It's non-conforming for a number of reasons. It's a rock rip pier. It has superstructure, the boathouse. It has a viewing deck on top. It's within the setback. So there's a number of reasons, and the pier head is too big. There's a number of reasons why it's non-conforming. But that really doesn't matter for the navigability finding. It's, you know, we take the situation as it lies. So while, you know, I want to make certain that it is, you understand that it is nonconforming, it doesn't preclude a determination by the Corps that the spacing would be inadequate if it in fact proves to be inadequate. I don't know if that addresses your question.
I guess I was just getting at if it was a conforming pier with a conforming, you know, it didn't have the non-conforming structure facing the proposed new pier at the Johannesson property, if that would not make the less than the navigability concern because there would be more space, in fact, between the piers, or if that's a relevant concern or possibility. In other words, if it didn't have the non-conforming structure facing, you know, narrowing the distance between the piers, would that lessen the concern about navigability?
And John, we didn't get your last. We're not hearing you right now.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yes, that would lessen the concerns of navigability.
Okay, well, I'm glad I usually heard it. That's all I have.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments before we go to public comment? Yes, Cindy. You're on mute.
I think I'd learn by now. On the issue of nonconformity, if in the future the Hirashas felt they needed to modify a non-conforming structure in order. I mean, if this goes through and it is a problem, let's hope that doesn't happen and it's anticipated. But what happens in the case of a non-conforming structure seeking modifications to adapt to this?
In general, modifications are allowed if you can make a finding that it brings a structure into greater conformance and there's an environmental gain. As we were discussing with the other appeal, you cannot expand a non-conforming structure. So if they wanted to rearrange, the structure that they have, that generally would be we can make that work within a modification.
Well, I certainly hope that any decisions we're making or other agencies are making aren't going to force that. But if it were to happen, I just wanted to make sure I understood that they could make modifications if they were so inclined in the future.
Thank you, Cindy. Let's see. I don't see anybody else. So at this point in time, I'll go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff, and I'll turn it over to Catherine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few hands raised on this item. Chip Johannesson, you're unmuted by me. If you unmute yourself, you can address the governing board.
Hello, this is Chip Johannesson. You can hear me then? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. My wife and I are here. We own the house at 5568, which is a subject, North Lake Boulevard, which is a subject property. Counsel Greg Lean implies that we're just trying to build the biggest pier possible, but that's not true. We're saying, you know, as is required by regulations, that the additional pier length is necessary for the functionality of the pier. And I'd like to add to what John Marshall's already said, add a little bit just to clarify. To qualify for the extra length, the regulations require that there be a minimum of a 3% grade at the bottom, at the lake bottom. We have a 16.6% grade there, which is 5%, which is five times what the regulations require. So in that extra 12 feet, as you've heard, if we go out to the pier headline, we get two full additional feet of water depth, which is major. But functionality is not just a question of depth at the lake end of the pier head. The functionality also depends on the depth of water along the pier as it moves towards shore, where boats are attempting to use the pier where those boats would be. And this is where the trouble lies, because that same steep slope that gets us so much additional water depth on the lakeside as you extend the pier means is that you move back toward the shore, the water gets shallow pretty quickly. And without the additional 12 feet of length, the shoreward side of the pier quickly becomes unusable, except under high water conditions. Now, in his PowerPoint, our consultant Wyatt Ogilvy showed you a photo of someone standing in the water, and that was me. That was me last Friday, so it's current water conditions, and it was the last clear day we had. I was standing at the shore end of what would be a hypothetically shortened pier head, and already you could see the water level was below my knees. That's where the bow of a boat attempting to use the shortened pier would be today. A shortened pier would already be borderline unusable even with today's water conditions. And according to the USGS, today's conditions are more than 2.5 feet higher than the low point in the last drought. So in drought conditions or anything like them, our pier head would basically be high and dry rocks. The pier would be unusable. Now, no pier on Flick Point has been built like that, where it's unusable except in the highest water conditions, and that's why the pier headline is where it is. The TRPA regulations recognize that, and they recognize the likelihood of low water in our future. That's why the 12 feet of additional length was already approved in this particular case, where the lake bed is rocky and relatively steep. So we're asking you to deny the Harash appeal and keep that TRPA approved in place. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Catherine, any further public comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Virginia Stock, you're unmuted on my end to address the governing board. Let's try that again. You're unmuted on my end. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so anyway, we received news that we'd been gotten in the lottery the right to apply for a private pier back in July 2019. We immediately tried to find a consultant who had experience and really understood this complex ordinance and of equal importance to us had a reputation for honesty and complying with the ordinance in a straightforward fashion. Because, and I'm going to take a little aside here, what the TRPA has achieved at Lake Tahoe is incredibly important to us. It's with real pleasure we are complying with this ordinance. Anytime I hear someone complain that they didn't get to paint the house their color they wanted, I say, hang on, let me tell you what it was like in the 60s and just how trashed Lake Tahoe would be right now without the TRPA. I mean, it's remarkable that during this time when the population of California has doubled, the TRPA has managed to make the water a lot clearer than what I remember playing, the oil slicks I remember playing in as a kid, and the shoreline looks better. So as the saying goes, thank you for your service. Wyatt immediately told us that we would need sign off from a number of different governmental agencies that the process almost started with the TRPA for clear reasons. It's the most rigorous scrutiny, and going to the other agencies for approval first and then receiving changes from TRPA would probably result in unnecessary waste of time and money. This was not some kind of subterfuge, nor was it an unusual process, as Jay Greg Lean claims. We were informed by Wildography. It is almost always the usual process. So long and short, to the best of our knowledge, we have not subverted the TRPA process by coming to TRPA before the other governmental agencies. It was certainly not our intention. As I stated, we think this process is a fantastic template for how to preserve a very public asset that is surrounded by private property, much of it owned by notoriously some of the largest fortunes in the world. We're very happy to be complying with it as represented by the approval by the TRPA and all staff review of this. We urge you to reject this appeal, which in our mind undermines the whole, both the goals and the nature specifics of the ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further public comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Kevin Rookie, you are unmuted on my end. If you unmute yourself, you can address the board.
Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to answer a couple of questions that Shelley and Cindy brought up with regards to the timing. The core process has changed. There is no longer a GP, a general permit, regional general permit 16 up at Lake Tahoe. And they have a new general permit for docking structures. If it doesn't meet those conditions, then it has to go through what's called a letter of permission process, which is basically a modified standard permit. But again, they have to do all of the coordination with the other federal agencies, and 60 days would be pushing it, even with full staff. But right now, they have one staff person, and they are working from home. There's nobody in the office except the staff chief, who is the one person. She's in there twice a week, I believe, for a couple of hours a day. So the processing of it in 60 days would probably not happen, but I can't say for sure. And then with regards to simulations, what we were talking about was not for scenic, but for the approach that the new pier provides or causes for access to and from the upshore and downshore piers. Those approaches are what can cause that hazard to navigation, especially during a storm. If they have to come in closer to that new pier, some of the wave wash could wash an unskilled mariner into the pier instead of into the safe harbor. So those are the kinds of things that, from the core staff standpoint, they are looking at. Does the structure change the approach of the current structures for them to have access to their piers? But again, not just for the landowners, but for the general public who may have to, in an emergency situation, use that pier as safe harbor.
Thank you. Is there anybody else, Catherine, that is not the appellant or the applicant who has their hands up?
The last hand up is Michael Harash.
Okay, because there were two applicants who got 3 minutes each to do that, I'm going to allow this, but this is the last. And then on a go-forward basis, we need to make sure that the applicants and the appellants understand that the time that they have to make their presentation is during the time that's allotted in the event in the hearing. So go ahead, Michael.
Mr. Harash, you're unmuted and can address the governing board.
I think you might be on mute, Michael. I'm not able to hear Michael. Catherine?
It looks like he is It looks like he is changing his audio at the moment. Yeah, I see you on the phone there, Michael.
John, do you have any suggestion here with respect to this?
It looks like that he's trying to use his phone, but he needs a pin to talk. And we've sent him an audio pin. So can we just give it a few more moments to see if we can get him on?
Yep.
Michael, you are unmuted on my end. If you can unmute yourself. And make sure your volume is up on your device.
And that you're unmuted. Yeah. We still aren't able to hear you, Michael.
Catherine, from our end, it looks to me like he's able to speak and the issues are on his end. Is that accurate?
Yes, I agree. He's unmuted from the meeting organizer standpoint and unmuted from his own device. The only other thing could be if the volume or microphone on his device is not functioning.
Greg, Lean, this is John Marshall. Are you still available? Can you make a few comments on his behalf? You know what he was going to say?
I don't know what he was going to say. You could just give him a couple more minutes. I imagine he was going to talk to the extra length and the manner in which they access their vote house, which will be, of course, dramatically impacted by the structure, essentially their entrance to the their boat house is going to be blocked as a practical matter in late afternoons when we have the anticipated 4 to 6 foot wave heights that our engineer has calculated. So it's really quite a task to maneuver in there now. And with that in the way, you just can't come in safely. I think that's what he was going to talk about. But again, I'm being presumptive and I'm hoping he's going to pop on here because I know he really wanted to speak to you. And I'm not in touch with him right now, so I don't know what he's trying to do. My apologies.
Michael, can you try again?
Looks like he is signing off and perhaps signing back on.
Catherine, is there anyone else?
There's no one else with their hand raised.
There we are. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Great. Thank you, and I'm sorry for delay with the muting and unmuting. This peer is going to make it very difficult and in some conditions us unable to come into our peer. And our peer is used as a safe harbor and has been many times over the years, and as recently as a month ago, somebody kept their boat overnight because they needed to come into a safe harbor, because we're on Flick Point with that rock crib pier, and the waves, 3 to 5 feet are rolling by, and now you're putting this pier out there. And to speak to the length, that second diver in the water, that was me. That was where the bow of the boat would have been, and that was a current video. And so the stern of the boat is where the diver was showing you the size of the rocks. And so there would be enough room for a boat to have a shorter pier. And all of this really could be solved with a continuance. If somebody could put forward a motion for a continuance, and if you would please grant us a continuance to allow the Army Corps to explore the navigation and safety aspects of this and go through it and find the common ground that would allow our pier to be usable and for the Stock Johanses to have a pier. I understand not having a pier. I grew up on that little 20 feet of beach that's sandwiched in between these two piers that still many families use to get in and out of the lake. And instead of approving this pier, which is going to create this hazard for ourselves, for the Stock Johansens coming in, anybody seeking safe harbor, and all the swimmers, just by doing a continuance and allowing the only person who can make a determination on navigation and safety, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, to weigh in on this, we do all of ourselves a service. We all love Lake Tahoe. You know, that's 40 summers I count myself lucky to have lived in Lake Tahoe. And so I respect deeply the job of protecting the lake. And which brings me to my final point, which is, why does it take 5 votes, a supermajority, to overturn this when it's supposed to be a supermajority to approve it? So therefore, not even a majority of board members has a say as to what goes on in this lake and can overturn staff. How does that help the board continue to protect the lake? So I don't understand the voting rules, and how many times has that voting rule been used for an approval of a dock? And here, this is the first dock being approved.
Michael,
so I just implore you to please consider a continuance and allowing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to weigh in on the navigation and safety issues, so that we can all be in alignment, Michael, and you can be
Michael,
in alignment with your own rules.
Michael, the 3 minutes is up. Thanks. Appreciate it. Okay, so I'm going to bring this back. Is there any further public comment?
Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to close public comment. I'm going to bring it back to the board. Are there any further discussions, questions? Cindy, go ahead.
Quickly, I just want to make sure to that point that was just raised, and I think we've heard this before, but John, if you could, does TRPA's approval today in any way prejudice the Army Corps' determination on navigability?
No, it doesn't.
And we're absolutely positive of that. They work completely independently.
Absolutely positive. It'll be their own determination as to whether or not the structure as proposed will constitute a navigational issue.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I've got two other people wanting to comment. Shelley, please.
Yeah, I just had a quick question for John, or maybe it's a question for the applicant or the applicant's attorney. But I'm assuming that the applicant is aware of the indemnification provision in the permit. So, you know, any litigation that is filed that TRPA has to defend will be at the expense of the applicant. Are they aware of that, John?
I know Greg has, in other contexts, is aware of that condition, but it is directly on the permit. And I know that Wyatt has dealt with a lot of permits. So we can ask them directly, but they know now.
Yes, and Board Member Aldean, this is Greg Gatto, and yes, we are aware of that requirement. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Shelley. Bud, question?
Well, I just have a couple comments on it. You know, I'm always sympathetic to people who are trying to build or improve their piers. I understand both parties' concerns and issues. But just as a couple observations that I have, first, as to the additional length of the pier being applied for, I certainly understand that. I'm a boat owner too, and I can tell you I wouldn't want to take my boat, my expensive boat, into even 3 feet of water, much less 1 foot of water. And as pointed out, the bow is different than the stern. The stern is what counts. So I understand that. So I don't think there's any merit to that argument. On the other thing, as I understand, the argument for the continuation is to is to require the applicant to go to the Army Corps of Engineer first and get their ruling. But they are getting full, the applicant would get full TRPA approval here, but for the condition that's put on it, where they have to go to the Army Corps. Now, I do recognize Mr. Lean's argument that under the code, there's a limited period of time in which to file an appeal of the TRPA decision. I think it's 60 days. But, you know, to file that appeal is a pretty simple task for lawyers. All they have to do is file notice of the appeal and if they have to file an actual complaint in court. But, you know, I am a lawyer. I'm not licensed in California, but I'm not aware of any court in California, Nevada, or even the federal courts that acts on the day you file the appeal. These actions take months, if not years, to process. Yes, there's a lot of cost and expense in doing that, but, you know, courts will, you know, if given an excuse, they will, you know, give the parties time to get something done. And that something done could be getting a resolution of the Army Corps of Engineers. So I don't think that, you know, everything doesn't end just because they have to file an appeal. Now, another thing, too, I'm also impressed, and I was glad Cindy asked the question about the Hirashas, and I do understand their concern here. But, you know, if they can, if the Stock Johansson Pier is approved and ultimately constructed, and apparently it meets all of the new code standards, which is great. But if that happens, then the Hirashas still have a further avenue to preserve their right, and that would be to modify their pier in a way that would bring it into conformance. and whether that would be a restructuring of their access into the boat lift, or perhaps a replacement of the boat lift with just simple, or the boat house with a boat lift. I don't know what's available. I haven't examined that area, but it sounds like they have alternatives available to them. So I think overall, I'm sympathetic to both parties, but I think that both parties can be successful in the long run here. And I don't think, the fact that someone has a non-conforming use, and a non-conforming use doesn't override or overdo the new TRPA shore zone code. It appears to me that the Stocks and Johansons have met that code. And so therefore, I if I could vote on this, which I can't, but if I could vote on it, I would vote as recommended by the legal committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Bud. Is there any, Bill. Actually, is there any other comment? If there are no other comments, then I think Bill has requested to make a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make the motion just made on 147, but maybe John would like to explain the motion before I make it.
The motion is to, we need an affirmative motion to grant the appeal. And if you want to uphold the hearings officer, you will vote no. And that will be in effect to deny the appeal. If you want to grant the appeal, then you would vote yes. And there needs to be, in order to revoke this permit or modify it, you'll need to have 5 California votes to vote yes on the motion to grant the appeal, and 9 overall.
Thank you, John. So I move to grant the appeal, which motion should fail to affirm the hearing officer's determination.
Thank you. We have a motion, and I'd like Maria to take the roll call, please.
Ms. Alding?
No.
Ms. Faustinos? Ms. Faustinos, it looks like you're self-muted.
Is there progress?
Okay, finally, progress. Apologies. Vote is no.
Mrs. Sagaski?
No.
Mr. Friedrich?
No.
Ms. Hill?
No.
Mr. Lawrence?
No.
Ms. Novosel?
No.
Mr. Rice?
No, and thank you, Bill.
Mr. Yates?
No.
Ms. Williamson?
No.
Mr. Bruce?
No.
Ms. Gustafson?
I'm going to abstain on this.
Mr. Chair, that motion fails.
Okay, thank you, John. Is there anything else we need to be aware of before we move to the next item? Okay, thank you everybody for your arguments. Thank you, witnesses. We're going to move to the next item. And the next item are reports. Agenda item 9. I'm going to introduce this item. Basically the purpose of this item is to review performance and the pay for both Joanne first and then John second. So I'll start with the executive director portion of this first. At first, I'd like to share some past salary and pay information, salary study and pay information. Joanne's current pay is $193,000. TRPA's study of similarly situated executive directors shows that the 25% percentile salary is at $209,000, and the midpoint is at $238,000. My understanding is that came from a study in 2017 that has been updated. So Joanne's salary as of now is significantly under the 25 percentile mark. For comparisons of past years, Joanne received back in 2018-19 a $10,000 bonus, but because of COVID, received no bonus last year. I assume that all of you have received and reviewed Joanne's self-evaluation. I also assume you've all reviewed Joanne's list of accomplishments. It's a joint list with John over the past year. For a refresher, I do want to go through some of the more significant accomplishments. The 2020 Regional Transportation Plan, the adoption of the first Transportation Sustainable Communities Threshold Standard, the launching new affordable housing initiatives, identifying climate action as the overarching EIP framework. And for those of you who are engaged and involved in this, that is far more significant and covers all sorts of areas because of all of the impacts that we are seeing relating to climate change. The approval of the Tahoe South Event Center project, the approval of the Washoe County Area Plan, and delivering the first fully online threshold evaluation. Those are just some of the accomplishments, and that's, in my view, that's incredible. This was all in the face of a pandemic, all in the face of not knowing what was coming, not knowing where we were going to be, having to act remotely, both through staff interaction and governing board, considerations relating to public meetings and public meeting law. The last year and a half has been incredibly, incredibly challenging. And remember, there was no incentive pay last year for Joanne. I don't know anybody more committed to her job than Joanne. She responds to my calls and texts late at night and on weekends. She initiates them late at night and on weekends. She not only responds, she follows through, always above and beyond my request. I've been most impressed this year watching her work on relationships that are most important for the success of TRPA. And one of those is a relationship that we have with Lahontan on the most on one of the most significant threats to Lake Tahoe, and that is the AIS and the Keys, and the Tahoe Keys. She's our leader, and I'm very thankful for that. In my view, she should be significantly rewarded. The staff report is recommending a $7,000 bonus and a 3% pay increase. My strong suggestion is that we recommend to the government approve a $10,000 bonus and at least a 3% pay increase. This is a very difficult day to have an evaluation, because Joanne, it's your birthday, and We celebrated that at the beginning of this day. It's a tough day to have to celebrate a birthday, and it was a very time-consuming, complicated, complex hearing date. But with that, I would love to turn it over to the rest of the board for their comments and any questions or considerations. Let's see. I'm looking at Bill. Is it Bill? Did you? Yeah, Bill. Go ahead.
Yes, it's me, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate all the nice things that you said, Mark, as chair. You find out how really excellent Joanne is, and that was certainly my experience the last couple of years, especially during that very difficult time for me personally as at the second part of my term. And when we had to change over to this virtual process, but also we did it in the midst of the event center coming down, in which there were all sorts of deadlines as far as approval of that project. But when you look at overall the stuff, I mean, I recall back in the days when I first was driving up to Tahoe with Clem, and I keep saying, well, what about this? What about that? And he just looked at me and says, oh, well, that doesn't apply to Tahoe. We're sui generis, which is that legal term for there's nothing like us. And it really is true. To be executive director of a bi-state organization with all of the agencies that Joanne stays on top of, is part of, yet being very available, and also working so closely in building the staff. And I can tell you, it's always just amazing to me the confidence that I had at all times that the staff work was first rate, and that the staff was well prepared for our governing board meetings and the types of meetings that occurred prior to the governing board meetings to make sure that everything was in place. I mean, she's excellent. She's an excellent leader. She's a motivator. So I agree with Mark, and I think the motion should be to pay her an incentive of $10,000 and to increase her base pay to $204,000. And that's to tip the hand of that's really what the legal committee did for John, simply because of his excellent work. I think we have two great leaders, but certainly the one at the very top, Joanne, has done so much for this organization. And the fact that we couldn't do anything last year just makes it, I think, all the more important to do it, to take care of this issue now. And I think she deserves more than was being proposed. But certainly, from what I've told within staff, is affordable, and we should do that. So thank you.
Thanks, Bill. I see Shelley with a comment, please.
Yes, thank you, Mark. I certainly echo everything that's been said. I still, to this day, admire the way Joanne pivots so effectively when faced with a challenge, and certainly her level of dedication exceeds anything that I've witnessed, having worked with other executive directors of other agencies and private organizations. And, you know, as I've mentioned in the past, you know, I've witnessed over the last, well, since her hiring, which has almost been 18 years ago, but not quite, how the culture at the agency has changed. I mean, we have gone from an organization that was once hated to an organization that now is only mildly disliked. No, I'm just kidding. To an organization that is well respected, and that is phenomenal. That is a phenomenal accomplishment. And it speaks to her, the depth of her commitment, the fact that she, you know, is somebody who can empathize. She can be stern when she needs to be. She can be demanding when required. But at the end of the day, you know, she values what every member of staff and the governing board has to offer to the organization. And all of those talents and abilities just add, you know, to the overall image of the agency and heighten our ability to work effectively together. So I have no problem with what what both Mark and Bill are recommending, the $10,000 incentive pay increase and bumping her up to what is really the lower range of what people in comparable positions are being paid. Thank you, Joanne, for all your hard work.
Thank you, Shelley. Do we have anybody else? Any other comments? I'm not hearing any. Do I? I guess, John, do we go to public comment after the second part of the report?
We have these agendized separately, so if you want to go now, or you can wait until after Joanne gives her ED report if she has one.
Okay, great. Thank you. So, Joanne, would you like to give any kind of a report before we go to public comment?
Now, Mr. Chair, I do want to just say thank you to my staff, because I couldn't accomplish any of it without them. So we're kind of a package deal here.
Okay. Thank you so much. So at this point in time, we'll go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on these agenda items, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Catherine, would you please take us through public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Give members of the public one more minute to find that hand-raising button. There are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you. We'll deem public comment closed. I will bring it back to the board for a motion. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to award Joanne Marchetta incentive pay of $10,000, increase her base pay to $204,082.
Okay, we have a motion. Not seeing any questions or further discussion. Mario, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Aldi?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Absolutely.
Mr. Fraser?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Rice? Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, now we're moving into John Marshall's review for the general counsel. And I'm going to give some opening remarks here, like I did for Joanne. And some of this is similar. Again, I'd like to share some past salary study and wage information. John's current pay is $177,000. TRPA's study of similar situated general counsels showed that the 25 percentile salary was at $182,000 and the midpoint was at $206,000. That was back in 2017. That's been updated and revised. So John's salary as of now still remains slightly below the 25 percentile. For comparisons of past years, John received a $10,000 bonus in 2018-2019, but because of COVID, received no bonus that year at all. I assume that all of the governing board members have reviewed John's self-evaluation. I also assume that you've all reviewed John's and Joanne's joint list of accomplishments. I went through those during Joanne's item, and so I will not go through them again. I will say that I've served as one of 12 civil attorneys for the city of Reno at a time, and it I understand the job. I understand how difficult it is. I understand that you are, in many cases, the face and the most significant at times, especially on legal issues, responding party to an entire body of the public. I've served as counsel for two different cities and one county. And I will tell you that sitting at the podium during a public meeting and knowing answers with clarity and accuracy is an extremely difficult thing, especially with the breadth and significant issues that we deal with on a regular basis. I have seen extraordinary work and responses in public meetings when pressure is on most. And when the answer is not clear, John is very clear to let us know that it isn't and is quick with a solution to deal with for efficiency purposes at the hearing. So given all the foregoing, I do support the unanimous decision in legal. And I don't have that at my fingertips. Do you have that at your fingertips for purposes of explaining to the board what that was?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. And I'll just say that the legal committee approved John Marshall an incentive pay of $10,000 and to increase his base pay to $186,755 as set forth at page 359 of our agenda. So we increased the incentive pay from $7,000 to $10,000 and agreed to the $186,755, which was in the original proposed motion in the staff report.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that, Bill. I'd like to now open this up to questions and comments from the board. Questions or comments?
Well, I will jump right in again. Again, when I was chair,
Bill, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Is this a comment or is this a motion? Because Shelley also has a comment.
Oh, it's not a motion. No, I'm sorry. I'm just going to comment on John.
Okay, great. Thanks.
I mean, I realize I said all these nice things in legal, but you know, I'll say it again.
Yeah. Please.
No, I would have just like to say for the sake of the whole governing board, that I don't think many of the major items that we did, and I know in particular during the event center, when I was just getting back from surgery, and there's pressure on getting that thing done, and that was not the cleanest of processes. We had problems with the environmental analysis. We had the California Attorney General screaming about VMT, and all this stuff. The league was uncertain about the event center, and we had a couple of months to pull this together. And I think Paul on staff and John, they must have worked around the clock. That's the kind of commitment that John has, is that, and I know that the staff really relies on his kind of steady legal analysis when we're dealing with these issues. It certainly helped at VMT. He had to dive into the modelers. He had to deal with transportation issues, all this stuff, and it was very reassuring as we put together the various staff reports and revising what we're going to do on vehicle miles traveled threshold, John had looked over it. And so, you don't find a job like this. I mean, this is a job of two states, two different kind of procedural operations. And yet he does keep all this stuff pretty close, in his brain and can answer those questions, sometimes a little long-winded, but often just right on what you need to know in order to continue with a matter that's before the governing board. And so I'm very comfortable, as I was as a legal committee member, to proposed what we did. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. And Shelley. Shelley has a comment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, John is he's very calm and collected, and uses, I think, an incredible amount of temperance and self-control in contentious situations, and that has not always been the case. I mean, I remember when John received some, hopefully he took it this way, constructively critical comments. But he took those comments to heart, and I'm really proud of his progress over the years. I mean, and I don't think that anybody would contest the fact that nobody has the command of our code the way John does. I mean, he is incredibly conversant with not only our current code, but changes to the code over the years. He is quick on his feet. You know, when he's asked a question, he doesn't defer the answer in most cases. I mean, he has the maturity, you know, to defer if, in fact, he doesn't feel confident in his response. But, with both of these individuals, I mean, I just feel blessed that we have them as part of our team, and I don't know how they're going to be replaced. And hopefully that won't be an issue during my remaining tenure on this board, because I think filling their shoes is going to be a tremendous challenge. So I am fully supportive of what has been recommended, that we increase his incentive pay to 10,000 and that we increase his base pay to the amount previously mentioned in the record.
Thank you, Shelley. Alexis has a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would like to say, as a new board member, John has been very patient with walking me through a lot of questions that I've had on appeals that have gone before the board or coverage questions, and always follows up with additional information and is very generous with his time. So I just want to say that's very appreciated for me, and I'm learning a lot, and it's because I have willingness from the staff to really teach. So thank you, John, for doing that.
Thank you, Alexis. I appreciate that. Okay, I don't see anybody else on the chat. So to the extent anyone else has any other questions or comments, I think we're going to ask John if he's got a report. And if he doesn't have a report, we're going to go to public comment.
Thank you. First, I'd just like to thank all of you for those comments and for the comments in the legal committee. I will try to make my comments short, Bill, and say, like Joanne, the vast bulk of what we do is accomplished by people who are not directly in front of you. And so it really is staff members who support what we do, particularly when we're the face in front of you. And so I'd like to thank in particular Catherine, who does a whole lot, not only for me, but for a lot of the what you guys experience. And I very much appreciate her aid and assistance, as well as all the staff members that are behind a lot of the appeals that you hear or projects that we're doing. So thank you very much for those comments. Thank you for the monetary reward. Deeply appreciated. I just want to say, give you one update. Yesterday, the Third District Court of Appeal in California issued two opinions in the Squaw Valley master plan case. In effect, they sided with Sierra Watch and invalidated Placer County's approval of the development, in large part based on the environmental impacts report dealing with impacts in the basin, both VMT and air quality. It's a rather extensive decision, and I just managed to scream through it last night, but it's worth looking at, and I'll be back with you with more of a detailed analysis. But fundamentally, what it shows is that projects close to our borders in California, at least, need to take into account impacts within the basin and do so in a way that's consistent with how we analyze our impacts.
So I think it provides some good direction for those nearby basin projects, for local California jurisdictions that are doing those projects. And we stand ready to help. And if they're bringing the CIS back forward, back through, to help with the processing of that application. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Okay, I don't see any further questions or comments in the chat. I don't see anyone waving their hand. So at this point in time, we will go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Catherine, will you please take us through the public comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Thank you. We will deem public comment closed. I will bring it back to the board. I still don't see any questions or comments, so do we have a motion? Bill, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make the legal committee's motion. It's a motion to award John Marshall incentive pay of $10,000, increase his base pay to $186,755 per year.
Thank you. We have a motion. Not seeing any questions or comments. Mario, will you please take the roll?
Ms. Alving?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Lord?
Yes, I couldn't hear you. Yeah, that's a yes.
Ms. Novoselle?
Yes.
Mr. Rice? Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate it. Well deserved. We will move to item 10, agenda item 10, governing board member reports. Do we have any governing board member who has a report? If so, please raise your hand or send me a chat. Yes, Cindy, please.
Just a quick update. For those of you who know Aaron Casey, who was in our county CEO's office and in charge of the Tahoe operations, took a different job and left the county. We've just announced our appointment of Stephanie Holloway to that position. Many of you might remember Stephanie. She worked hard diligently on the corridor master plans and our VMT analysis, and worked with our TRPA staff closely. So we're thrilled to have Stephanie join the team up here in Tahoe. Just wanted to give you that announcement.
Thank you very much, Cindy. I appreciate that. Anybody else? I don't see anybody else.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just real quick, sorry, from El Dorado County. Just wanted to let everybody know that yesterday at our Board of Supervisors meeting, we had our first reading and approved a new vacation, a home rental ordinance that requires a clustering. It's a non-clustering ordinance of 500 feet. Just wanted to throw that out there. We are continuing with our neighborhood compatibility issues.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Sue. Sure. Anybody else? Yes, John.
Yeah, I'll give a quick report. South Lake Tahoe recently allocated half of our COVID funds from the American Recovery Plan Act, and to the extent they align with TRPA priorities, we gave the public a chance to directly vote on those in a participatory budgeting process. The biggest chunk went to affordable housing, also bike infrastructure, and fire hydrants in conjunction with STPUD. So that's wanted to share that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Anybody else? I don't see anybody else. So with that, we'll move to item 11, committee reports. Let's start with local government and housing.
Sorry, no report. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Legal committee, we've had enough business today, so we'll move to operations and governance.
Nothing further.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, Jim, EI Transportation Public Outreach.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. We did have a meeting. It was about an hour right before the full board got together. Our meeting largely entailed a presentation from the consultants that have been hired to come up with some recommendations for funding revenue sources for transportation projects and work through some of those issues. They reported out today results of some in-person surveys as well as online surveys regarding objectives for regional funding and objectives for governance and administration. The four primary objectives for the regional funding that came out of their survey work was that it needs to be predictable and sustainable, fungible, have clarity and transparency, and have equity between residents versus visitors. There was also a lot of discussion during that meeting that it also needs to encompass equal access and equity amongst income groups. Regarding governance and administration, the four priorities were to keep it simple, transparency, make sure that implementation is feasible and that the projects are coordinated. The committee, the EITPO committee, we're probably going to be meeting monthly for the rest of the year. Next month in September should be a pretty robust meeting because the consultants are coming back with a list of possible revenue funding sources and possible alignment with project priorities. So I'm anticipating that will be a pretty long meeting, but we'll have to see how it goes. And that concludes my report.
Great. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for that detail. I appreciate that. But forest health, wildfire.
Well, as I indicated before, our committee can be proactive now and should be in addressing some of these issues concerning cleaning up the forest. But priorities, first things first, and they have to get those fires out. And that's where all of our attention is. But we really need to give some thought to what can we do to help the fire guys and the public safety people and to promote and push forward existing and future plans to clean up our forests. Additionally, I would like to thank Joanne for the excellent emails she has been providing to all of us regarding the status of the fire, the daily status of the fire. I've taken the liberty of providing that to several of my friends and associates, and they've all been very appreciative of the information. And Joanne, thank you very much, and I hope that your schedule will allow you to continue to do that, at least during these real troublesome days. Thank you, and with that, that's everything I have.
Thank you. And just to follow up on that, Joanne, thank you for putting up with me over the last few days with weekend, early morning, late night text, finding out how things are going, what it is that we can all try to do with respect to this fire. My texting can get a little bit unruly, so I apologize for that. Bill, EIP, sorry, ARPIC. I think you're on mute, Bill.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard from John Hester, so I don't know what I'm up to in the near future. Part of what we did on housing back to Sue's committee, which probably is going to meet soon on that issue about accessory dwelling units. I don't know what else we have. It's kind of a post vehicle miles traveled period for ARPIC.
Oh, I'm sure we will find out sooner than later, Bill. You'll be the first to know.
Mr. Chairman, okay. This is John. We'd like me to comment on that.
Yes, please.
Next month, Bill, you will be having an update on the mobility mitigation fee.
Excellent. Okay.
Okay. That didn't quite coincide with the vehicle miles traveled moratorium, though, I don't think. But anyway,
I tried not to use
that. That's good to know.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. Esther. Thank you very much. So before we go into final public comment, I do want to apologize today. Wow. That's happy birthday, Joanne. That's a great photo. Is everybody seeing that?
Yeah.
It's well worth looking. Joanne, I see that you're burying your head in your hand.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
At least I have a cute dog.
Fantastic dog. Excellent.
That rivals John Marshall's coat.
Yes, it does. It's a fantastic hat on the dog and bandana. So happy birthday, Joanne. Thanks again for everything. We wish you the happiest of birthdays. I do want to apologize before we move into public comment with respect to the length of time that the appeal took. I just feel like it's important that people get a fair opportunity to make their arguments and make their pitches and walk away thinking that I haven't cut them off too soon. I give them a little bit of extra time, especially when the decision below is against them. And so I really appreciate you putting up with the additional time that I allowed there. With that,
Mark, personally, I appreciate the fact that you take that into consideration. I mean, people need to know that they're being heard. And at the end of the day, even if you don't support, you know, their position on any given issue, you've spent the time to hear them out, you know, and have spent some time ruminating over the details of the appeal. And that's critical. So, and I don't think you set any records. I think we've had longer appeals in the past.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for your patience. So with that, we'll move into the final public comment. Our final matter of business is our general public interest comment period. Any member of the public wishing to address the governing board on any item listed or not listed on the agenda, including items on the consent calendar, may do so at this time. Individuals or groups who have already commented on items listed on the agenda are not permitted to comment on the same topic. The governing board is prohibited from law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public during the public comment period. We'll hear comments on any single topic not on the agenda for up to but not to exceed 30 minutes. We will hear as many unique comments as possible, and we will hear comments for up to but not more than a total of 60 minutes. All unheard comments can be submitted via email to mambler@trpa.gov and will be forwarded to all governing board members. If any member of the public wishes to speak at this time, please raise your hand in the GoToWebinar. You will be unmuted one at a time by TRPA staff, who will indicate that you have the floor. At this point in time, I'd like Catherine to take us through public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no hands raised to make a comment.
Okay, we will deem public comment closed. We will move to item 13, adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we are adjourned.